Isla Piccola Casa, and La Mia Cucina. Joe Rombi has three rooms that can accommodate groups of any size from 16 to 60. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by La Piccola Casa, 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Peter King. About 140 people have been killed since Wednesday's attack on a Shiite mosque in Iraq. About 30 found dead today, although the military says there was less violence. The daytime curfew stays for another day because of what the Iraqi prime minister calls extraordinary circumstances. Some might call it downright scary. CBS News correspondent Kimberly Dozier is in Baghdad.
Now that it's nightfall, gunmen have come back out. We understand that men dressed in black have attacked two Sunni mosques. Sunnis, of course, are blaming the black-clad Mahdi army, followers of the radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr.
The president says there may be more bloodshed ahead, but CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports he's optimistic.
The White House rejects any suggestion that Iraq is headed for civil war. As for the surge in violence this week, President Bush says it's part of the road to democracy. And after speaking this morning with his ambassador in Iraq, he declared himself optimistic.
He reports to me that the leaders are committed to stopping civil strife.
In a speech to the American Legion, Mr. Bush voiced new confidence that a free government will emerge in Iraq, though he says the days ahead will be difficult and exhausting. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
In about 20 cities,
outdoors Bush!
Teamsters demonstrating against the planned takeover of operations at six American seaports by an Arab-owned company. The Bush administration says it won't cancel the deal.
All is said and done. We'll come to the same conclusion he has, that this is something that can go forward and not to jeopardize the national security of the United States.
The company has offered to delay the takeover while Congress takes another look. The Army has just charged seven members of the celebrated 82nd Airborne Division with engaging in sex for money on the Internet. The charges include sodomy and wrongfully engaging in sexual acts for money while being filmed. The Army's recommended that all be discharged. Looks like your BlackBerry will keep buzzing this weekend if you want it to. A federal judge is holding off on an injunction that would shut down on the service because it illegally...
Rice.
Starting at wide receiver.
I'm ready for some football.
All-time record holder and Tiger Balm's biggest fan.
Huh?
Especially Tiger Balm's new pain-relieving patch.
The patch works for me.
Just apply the advanced hydrogel patch and Tiger Balm goes deep. Deep into aching muscles and joints. Tiger Balm's been around almost as long as...
Hey, watch it, pal.
Number 80, Jerry Rice.
Take a tip from me. Go for the Balm, Tiger Balm, and put the Tiger in your team.
Available at drugstores everywhere.
Last year at the PBR World Finals, world champion Justin McBride teamed the Beast.
Folks, Justin McBride has done it.
Now the Beast is back, and revenge will be anything but sweet. Strap yourself in for an all-new season of the PBR Built for Tough Series. The toughest cowboys take on the baddest bulls.
Bugslinger, this might be his best year ever.
An all-new season of the PBR, Saturday and Sunday at 8 Eastern, only on OLN.
It was 10 years ago today, Cuban fighter pilots shot down two small unarmed planes over international waters.
Vigils will be held throughout the weekend to remember the four men killed. Maggie Cooley lost her brother, Armando Alejandre.
It's been 10 years of a lot of pain and very hard work. I think the work has helped us cope with the pain. It's been a search for truth and justice that we haven't finalized.
While relatives of the four won a $93 million civil suit against Cuba, they want to see indictments against members of the country's military who ordered the planes shot down. Michael Hiplin, CBS News, Miami.
Psychopath, how's that for a street name? The Traverse City, Michigan roadway is number one in an online poll of the nation's wildest, weirdest, wackiest street names. Some of the other names in the top 10, Bucket of Blood Street in Holbrook, Arizona, and Divorce Court in Heather Highlands, Pennsylvania. I'm Peter King, CBS News.
Sweet! I've been waiting for-
to lunch all day.
Me too. Natalie, I'll trade my apple for your potato chips.
I don't know, Matthew, my potato chips for your cookie.
Let's see. Billy, what's that?
Rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Rich chocolate Ovaltine?
An apple and my gummy bears for the Ovaltine?
No way.
Potato chips and grape juice for the rich chocolate Ovaltine?
No way.
Two cookies, bubblegum, and my Hershey's chocolate milk?
Double no way.
Aww. More Ovaltine, please.
For the fans. This is for all of you out there who want to get a little closer to the 2006 U.S. Olympic team. We know you're a fan, and AT&T has put together a way for you to get to know Team USA. You can send personal best wishes and good luck messages to each of your favorite U.S. Olympic team members. Just visit att.com/teamusa and let AT&T deliver your support to the U.S. Olympic athletes in Torino. AT&T, proud sponsor of the 2006 U.S. Olympic team. Introducing the new AT&T, your world delivered.
Live and unrehearsed, totally unscripted, and frankly, we don't know what's going to happen in the next 3 hours. You have found the Peter B. Collins Show, and I am your humble host, Peter B. We've got some great guests, lots to talk about, and lots of room for your phone calls today. I always like to give out the phone number at the top of the show. You can jot it down, program it into that fancy cell phone that you don't know how to operate. And call us whenever the urge strikes you, and as long as the First Amendment is in full effect. On the Central Coast, you can call me at 831-899-5792. That's a local call at 899-KRXA. If you're listening in Eureka or on your computer anywhere within the sound of my voice, the number to call is 888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. Coming up next hour, filmmaker Eugene Jarecki will join us to talk about his powerful new film about the military-industrial congressional media complex. The film is called Why We Fight, and it's an interesting exposition of America's military complex, our foreign policy, and some of the warnings that were issued by President and former General Dwight D. Eisenhower in 1960, the warnings about the excesses of the ongoing war and the military-industrial complex. Eugene Jarecki next hour. In our 5 o'clock hour, our regular weekly visit with the chairman of the California Assembly's Budget Committee. He's Democrat John Laird from Santa Cruz. He'll be joining us today. And this is the last day for legislators to submit new bills in the bill mill in Sacramento. And John Laird has a couple, one on needle exchange and one on levees, including the Pajaro levees here in the Central Coast area. He'll also talk about the bond negotiations and some other issues if there's time. And Brad Friedman, in his weekly visit, joins us about 5:20 today. He, of course, is the proprietor of bradblog.com and is on the front lines of the battles to protect elections in America. And just last week, in the 5 o'clock hour, using a tool out of the Bush administration's media coverage page, State Secretary of State, California Secretary of State, Bruce McPherson, dropped the bomb when he was hoping we weren't paying attention. And that bomb is that he has recertified Diebold electronic voting machines for use in California as early as this June's primary. That's all ahead on the program. In our first hour today, writer Christian Parenti joins us. His new book is called The Freedom, Shadows and Hallucinations in the 51st State of Occupied Iraq. Christian Parenti is the author of The Soft Cage and Lockdown America. He's a visiting fellow at the City University of New York Graduate School Center for Place, Culture, and Politics. And he writes regularly for one of my favorite publications, The Nation. Hello, Christian. Welcome to our program today.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Well, it's my pleasure. We've spoken before, and I'm glad to have you on. And I've really gotten a lot out of your book, The Freedom, Shadows and Hallucinations in Occupied Iraq. And let me just begin. We'll dive into the book and some of the very detailed coverage and interesting anecdotes that you offer. But I think it's important to get your thoughts on the current situation in Iraq, where Sunnis and Shiites are killing each other in record numbers, and the attack on the Golden Mosque in Samarra has led to what many people believe is a full-scale civil war. I believe that's the case, but we see the American media doing backflips to call it sectarian violence, to call it the early stages of a civil war. What is your characterization, Christian?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't see it as civil war light or civil war appetizers. I see it as full-on civil war. I mean, I think civil war has been going on for a while in Iraq. One of the characters in the book, Akil, my translator, who eventually got out of Iraq, his family, he was Sunni, but his family lived in a Shia neighborhood because his mother was a doctor at a clinic, and they left over a year ago. They were forced out of their neighborhood because they were Sunni, and the few Shia who lived in the neighborhood he was originally from, Adamiya, which is a very Sunni kind of upper-middle-class officer's neighborhood, very heavily involved with the resistance, there are no Shia up there, and there haven't been for at least a year. So, you know, and there's been all these bodies, people have been reading the wires and the stories, you know, every day there's a few bodies, between 3 and 4 and 20 bodies of men who've been executed, and these are Sunni and Shia death squads. A lot of it are Shia death squads operating out of the Ministry of the Interior, which is controlled by the Skiri, one of the large Shia parties, but it's also the Sunni guerrillas, the Sunni underground, just, you know, along with bombing Shia mosques, just grabbing Shia civilians and killing them. Mm-hmm. So, that, you know, if I lived under those conditions, I would consider that civil war. And this is definitely full-on civil war.
And do you think that we could solve the problem by delivering Fox News to every home in Iraq? Because after all, if they only knew that President Bush has a strategy for victory, wouldn't they operate differently?
I know. I thought that the most brilliant comments in this whole thing recently was when I think somebody on the Sunday talk shows played a clip of Bush basically calling for renewed resolve, and they played it for Murtha. And Murtha said, you know, this is a real war. This isn't a war of rhetoric. And, I mean, you really hit on something there. I mean, the Bush administration really seems to think that if they could just convince us here in America to just let go of our doubts, that somehow the people in Anbar province who are laying IEDs under American Humvees and have had their cities like Fallujah destroyed would give up and submit. And that's ridiculous. Those people are engaged in a real war, and they feel that they are going to win. It's utterly doomed. Yeah, and this idea that people can be convinced with proper spin that they have electricity when they don't have electricity, that they can be convinced that there's more security than there was before the war when there's clearly less security, is just one more indication of what this whole war was born out of, which was a type of ideological poisoning and a type of self-delusion that seems to be the MO of the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've been curious about over the last few days, watching the coverage of this violence that has been sparked by the attack on the Golden Mosque, is the Western media whispering, oh, this must be Al-Qaeda, this must be Zarqawi. And I'd like your take on that. Is Zarqawi the kind of operator who would foment this sectarian violence by going in and blowing up the very revered mosque there in Samarra?
I think that he would, yeah. I mean, now the extent to which Al-Qaeda is a coherent force, I think, needs to be questioned. It's become more of an ideology, and, I mean, there are networks that are associated with it. I mean, I just came back about a week and a half ago from Afghanistan. And in eastern Afghanistan, there's definitely, you know, a collection of foreign fighters with connections to Osama bin Laden that operate as an organization, and mm-hmm. you could call that Al-Qaeda. But then there's this broader sort of network of ideas and that Zarqawi is part of. But, yeah, there are definitely hardcore Sunni fundamentalists within the Iraqi guerrillas who want to see all-out war against these backsliders, as they call the Shia, who they think are, you know, don't have the proper version of the faith. So I see that as definitely part of it. Now, they don't make up the majority of the Iraqi resistance.
But no, I understand. And the reason I raised the question is we interviewed Mark Manning earlier this week. He's got a powerful new film out about the siege of Fallujah from the point of view of its residents. And he said that people in Fallujah, even though the U.S. has repeatedly reported that Zarqawi was hunkered down in Fallujah at times, the people there don't believe it. And they even seem to think that Zarqawi is some sort of a phantom figure manufactured by U.S. propaganda.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, and I think he is a real guy. And,
yeah, I understand that. I believe he is real, and I believe he is there, and I believe he is a provocateur.
Yeah.
But I also believe that he's an easy out for the United States because the Bush administration doesn't really want the American people to appreciate the complexities of these long simmering disputes between Sunnis and Shiites.
Right, and it's also, if you turn the problem into a guy, a cartoon villain, that's a lot simpler than having to think about political dynamics and social structures. It makes the whole situation static. So it's like, just like, well, if we could get that guy, first it was Osama bin Laden, now it's Zarqawi, then we get the problem. It's like, no, the problem is much deeper. And there is no rewinding the clock. I mean, one thing that one always gets, having written a book about Iraq, is people say, well, you know, what would, and how do we make it all better? And the assumption is that it can be made all better, that once a country is subject to sanctions and two wars and then all sorts of crazy nationalist and irredentist, religious fundamentalist armed minorities are let loose and begin to create momentum for their movements, that all of that can be rolled up and put back in place have the pieces be put back together is fantasy. I mean, Iraq has been permanently damaged and transformed. Hopefully it will find peace sooner rather than later. But the forces that have been unleashed and are now fueling each other, this bombing and the retaliation that we see is a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. These forces are giving, you know, have their own momentum. The U.S. invasion and occupation initiated all this.
Right. We're going to pause for a break, Christian. We'll pick up there as we continue in just a moment. Our guest is Christian Parenti. He's with us for this entire hour. His new book is powerful. It's The Freedom, Shadows and Hallucinations in Occupied Iraq. You got a question or comment? Bring it on. 831-899-5792 from the Central Coast, or toll free from elsewhere, 1-888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. Are you looking for money for college? Every year, billions of dollars in financial aid go unclaimed because parents just don't know how to properly access those funds. Mistakes are made in filling out applications, deadlines are overlooked, and ultimately it's the student who loses out on desperately needed funds. R.J. Moyer, president of AboutCollegeFunding.com, offers solutions to your financial aid dilemma.
If you're the parent of a college-bound high school junior or senior, critical deadlines are rapidly approaching, and we do specialize in late-stage college funding planning. Regardless of your income, assets, or home equity, I can help you send your child to the college of his or her choice without spending your life savings. But you must take action now.
AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. Call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it, in 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. The choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just 2 blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show on this beautiful Friday afternoon. It's 3:22. You're welcome to call us if you'd like to talk with writer Christian Parenti. He's with us till 4 o'clock. Central Coast number is 831-899-5792. Toll free from anywhere at 1-888-579-2540. Christian Parenti's a fine writer. His new book is The Freedom, Shadows and Hallucinations in Occupied Iraq. And, Christian, I'd like to share with our listeners here a couple of passages from Chapter 11 entitled Chaos the Sovereign. And in it, you draw the sharp contrast between the fortified and manicured American Green Zone, built at one of the old palace complexes of Saddam Hussein, and the other extreme, the Baghdad slum of Sadr City. And let me read just a few passages here. A year into the occupation and entering the Green Zone is still like consuming a 1,000-milligram tablet of denial, washed down with fresh-squeezed orange juice. The air conditioning here is superb. Everyone looks happy. David Bourne is working on his laptop at the Iraqi Business Center, a near-empty glass-walled subsection of the Convention Center. And you go on. He won't comment on how Halliburton and Bechtel got their huge slices of the $18.5 billion reconstruction pie, but that's already a matter of public record. On the other side of the glass wall, a uniformed janitor pushes a Zamboni-like buffer across a shining expanse of floor. Iraq seems 1,000 miles away. Now, unplugged from the matrix, the temperature suddenly soars to a brutal 115 degrees. The air reeks of sewage, and hot furnace-like gusts blow grit into your eyes. An urbanized plain of misery and squalor opens before you. The hyper-violent Sadr City. The wide boulevards laid down in the late 50s by the optimistic planners are now flooded for blocks at a stretch with ankle-deep pools of green, algae-rich sewage. Heaps of garbage smolder on the medians and in empty lots. Pirated electrical wires crisscross dense side streets of mud-brick homes. Small flocks of mangy goats and sheep shepherded by women in flowing black abayas forage in the trash. This is a very stark contrast, and Sadr City is where I'd like to go next, because this is where Muqtada al-Sadr's followers are. There, they've got the Mahdi army. And they dress in black and carry their Kalashnikovs, and they are certainly a force to be reckoned with, one that is not under the control of the leadership that we have put in place in Baghdad. Christian?
Indeed, they're not under the control. And in fact, they're now the largest single bloc within the United Iraqi Alliance, which is the largest kind of Shia coalition that runs the government. So out of not out of nowhere, but much to the surprise of U.S. planners, the most radical of the Shia organizations has now become the dominant force within the overall Shia movement, and the Shia movement controls the government. And those parties are all beholden to Iran. Saddam Hussein oppressed the Shia, not necessarily just routine Shia people, but anyone who was politically Shia, who felt that the government should be a religious Shia government. Saddam was horrifically oppressive to them. So many of these people fled to Iran, and they got support and aid from Iran. And that's where these parties, the Dawa Party, the Skiri, the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, and the Jeshimedi, the Mahdi Army, all draw their power from Iran, and in many ways are loyal to Iran. And Sadr said less than a month ago while visiting Iran, he said, if the U.S. attacks Iran, the Mahdi Army will support Iran. So it's just one more way in which this whole thing has spun out of control. An important point about the elections, I think, is to remember that they were not given as gifts by the U.S. occupation. They were demanded by Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, the head of the Shia faith. Paul Bremer, who was in charge for the first year of the occupation, prevaricated endlessly as to why there could not be elections, how there had to be a census first, etc., etc. It wasn't until January of 2004 that Sistani had had enough of this, because he knew that his people, the Shia, were a numerical majority and that they would win anything resembling fair elections and then control the government. He demanded these elections. They wouldn't get them. So he called everyone out into the street. There were massive protests. And then Bremer and Bush negotiated to have elections. And we've had this series of elections, which have, surprise, surprise, ended up with a Shia-dominated government. But then, of course, once faced with that defeat, the Bush administration has been spinning to, the media, which has a very short memory, mm-hmm. as if these elections were granted and this was the plan all along to, introduce these people to elections, but that wasn't. And people can go back and read the records. The Shia demanded these elections, and we can see that, now they have a government and it's not loyal to the U.S. That's just one more crazed angle on this whole thing.
Christian, since you brought up Paul Bremer now, let's talk a little further about this. I was very impressed with the work of your colleague, Naomi Klein. And in a series of articles in The Nation, she pointed out that Bremer, despite the conditions on the ground, was hell-bent on imposing a very right-wing free market economy on Iraq, one that was safe for foreign investment, safe for foreign profits. And the other key factor was the manner in which he stipulated that contractors, for example, were above the law, and the folks from Blackwater and these other mercenaries essentially cannot be prosecuted for crimes that they commit in Iraq. Give us a short answer now, then we'll take a break and come back and amplify further on what Paul Bremer did wrong. But in essence, on the privatization and the economic matters, what's your take?
Well, the bottom line is that the political situation got so violent that his free market fantasy has not come to pass, because nobody wants to invest in chaos. But yeah, what he tried to do was liquidate a statist economy and establish terms, as you described, that would be beneficial for foreign companies that they could.
We'll pick up there as we continue in just a moment. Christian Parenti, our guest, his new book, The Freedom, on the Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, Choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to the designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with its hot vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium. Or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Michelle Ashen of Ashen Senior Resources is an IRA distribution specialist. Other than your home, your retirement plan is probably the largest investment you have. And you have a choice. You can pass it on to your beneficiaries as a legacy, or it can be left as an IOU to Uncle Sam. Chaos can lead to confusion. Most financial advisors cannot help or answer such questions like, why should my IRA not be in my trust? Should there be a separate IRA for each beneficiary? Is there a way to set up a multi-generation stretch IRA? Michelle Ashen, a certified estate planner and IRA distribution expert, is offering a 30-minute free consultation which will resolve these issues and explain how to undo the mistakes you may have already made. Meet with Michelle to create a plan that will preserve and protect your life savings and distribute them in the most tax-advantaged way. Call today, won't you? 641-0236. That's 831-641-0236. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm Peter B. We continue with writer Christian Parenti. His new book is called The Freedom, Shadows and Hallucinations in Occupied Iraq. Coming up next hour, documentary filmmaker Eugene Jarecki describes the American military-industrial complex, a brand new film called Why We Fight. And your calls are welcome, 831-899-5792 for the Central Coast, or toll-free at 888-579-2540. We'll go to the phones in a moment, but I want to give Christian an opportunity to expand on the answer we tried to squeeze in before that last commercial break about the legacy of Paul Bremer. I call him Boots Bremer. He used to wander around Iraq in a coat and tie and those army boots. Yeah. And, of course, he's now a book author who is out on the book circuit, the promo circuit. I saw him on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart a month or so ago. And he's trying to explain away certain things. He's, you know, there's a little daylight between him and the Bush administration, but not much. And he did, as we pointed out, and Naomi Klein has done a great job of reporting, install a number of decrees in Iraq that have led to some of the factors that we have there today. So I'd like to give you an opportunity to talk more about the legacy of Bremer. Go ahead, Christian.
Well,
Yeah, he tried to impose a vision of a total free market society, which opened, among other things, the Iraqi oil industry to more foreign participation and allowed for the full expatriation of profits. But the fact of the matter is that very few companies have invested in Iraq. Companies have gone to Iraq in the interests of capturing Iraqi oil revenue and U.S. tax money in the form of reconstruction contracts. And as myself and Naomi and other people in the nation and other magazines have shown, there's been massive, massive corruption among that contracting, most of which has been run by Halliburton and Bechtel or other friendly subsidiaries of theirs. The main legacy of Bremer was not, in fact, his fantasy of privatizing everything, but was the military situation he left behind.
Yeah.
He had to escape 2 days early.
Right.
When he left, he had a photo op on a C-130 and then snuck onto a helicopter and then onto a jet so that if the resistance had found out about the C-130, they would shoot down that instead of the plane he was on. I mean, everything you asked earlier is what was wrong with Bremer. I mean, every single thing that Bremer did was wrong. It was almost like he didn't miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Mm-hmm. From firing the military to attacking Muqtada Sadr, part of the reason that Sadr has one of the most powerful positions in the government now, I mean, not him as a person, but that his party has so many seats in the parliament, is because he was seen as resisting the occupation, and he was given opportunities to do that by Bremer, who would do stuff like shut down Sadr's paper, newspaper, mm-hmm. order arrest warrants for him that were obviously impossible to execute, etc., etc. So, I mean, yeah, Bremer, despite his best efforts in this book and his total arrogance about not taking responsibility for having helped destroy that country, is going to go down, I think, in history as one of the most reckless and incompetent colonial administrators ever.
And his replacement is Zalmay Khalilzad, who came out of the right-wing think tanks. He was a part of the Project for a New American Century. We parked him in Afghanistan for a while and then moved him over. Mm-hmm. Is his legacy going to be any better?
I don't think so. I mean, he's a little more qualified in that he is from the region. He doesn't speak the language. He's Afghan, but he's understands Islam, understands some of the cultural logic of the region. But it's sort of too late for any one individual to put this thing back together. There's no will to deal with the contracting corruption. And if there were a real strategy to try and rescue the U.S. project in Iraq, it would begin with the billions of dollars that have been seized and stolen and wasted by the contractors, and it would try and get that money back, and it would come up with some sort of plan to rebuild the infrastructure using Iraqi companies, basically using that money to co-opt the Sunni elite who fund the resistance now and put them to work, put the rank-and-file people to work, and allow the Sunni elites to make money on the process of rebuilding the country. And obviously they have to deal in the Kurds and the Shia. But there's no approach. There's nothing like that. I actually mentioned this a year and a half ago on McNeil Lair and was called up by the producer and told I could never be on the show again. They even told the Village Voice that. There was a story about it. I mean, the idea that you would criticize contracting and suggest that the Bush-connected firms have been corrupt is still not taken seriously. But that is what would have to happen were there to be any correction of this. And there's nothing that Khalilzad or Negroponte before him or anyone can do there if there isn't some massive restructuring of the whole project in Iraq, where the flow of resources would have to be ultimately reversed from U.S. corporations to the people of Iraq, as opposed to the way it's going now. And there's no will to do that in the Bush administration. That's anathema to what they stand for. And they don't even, they don't even want to admit that we're in a serious tailspin in Iraq.
Yeah. Here's another passage from Christian Parenti's book, The Freedom. Iraq reconstruction is a racket. The vast majority of the money allocated for tasks such as rebuilding schools, hospitals, and utilities has disappeared into the accounts of Bush administration-connected firms like Halliburton and Bechtel. It's worth recalling the backstory to all this, since the details are almost unbelievable. Vice President Dick Cheney receives a monthly stipend of $13,000 from Halliburton, a firm he once ran. The U.S. government gives Halliburton roughly $1 billion a month for work in Iraq related to reconstruction and military service contracts. Cheney's legacy to Halliburton was that he bought Dresser Industries for $7.7 billion. Dresser turned out to have billions in outstanding asbestos-related damages to pay. Without the Iraq contracts, Halliburton, which had a net loss of $947 million in the fourth quarter of 2003 despite year-end revenue that was up 63%, would probably be in bankruptcy thanks to the asbestos payments and other problems connected to creative accounting. That is a mere sliver of the madness. Dave and Humboldt, thanks for holding on. Join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show with Christian Parenti.
Well, Christian, I've several times shared my views with Peter, and now as I'm hearing you more, I think we maybe are going to be close. I throw this out because I hope that somebody will prove me wrong, or if not, at least that we have clearly a reality out there to deal with. And it is my conclusion that there is not and never was any semblance of a noble purpose that took us into Iraq. It has everything to do with, and I think you're dealing with it, corruption. It is the desire for massive wealth, shifting the United States Treasury into the pockets of this little Carlyle-Peanut group, and no such thing as any noble purpose. There was no desire to bring democracy to these people. There was no thought of weapons of mass destruction. It was strictly the ongoing greed of these tycoons that have stolen our country.
I would agree with that. I don't think there were ever any noble purposes going into Iraq, and those noble purposes were lies to cover the fact that they wanted to seize the oil for two reasons. I think one, because it would be great for American firms to be able to control the production of that oil and sell it to people and make more profit on it, and also because geostrategically it would be great for the United States and all the businesses that are connected to the U.S. government if the U.S. could position itself as the security arbiter of Middle Eastern oil by having permanent bases on top of the second largest oil reserves in the world, and to be the force that guaranteed the safety of Europe's and Asia's main oil supplies. North Sea oil in the U.S. in Europe is declining rapidly. They're increasing their imports from the Caspian and from the Middle East. China and India are both growing so fast that they have to burn all the coal they can, invest heavily in alternative fuels, and increase massively the amount of oil they import from Africa and particularly the Middle East and the Caspian. So if the U.S. could have successfully positioned itself as the oil cops, then they would have had all sorts of other leverage that they could have used on any number of fronts to get people to go along with free trade deals here, to get people to agree with them and their votes in the UN, to not pressure them as much on Kyoto, any sort of issues like that. So I think those were the two main reasons that the Bush administration went into Iraq. One, to get the profits for the firms connected to them, and two, to get the power associated indirectly with being the cops who make the oil safe.
And Christian, to your point about the permanent bases, this is an issue we've discussed a lot on this program, and I have great concerns about it. Tom Engelhardt at the Nation Institute, Tom Dispatches, his blog, published a great piece last week where he clearly identified two of the mega bases that we're building. But I've heard reports of up to 14 substantial permanent bases that the U.S. either wants to build or is establishing in Iraq. What's your notion of how far this goes?
I've heard the same thing, that 14 are planned, but I don't think they have begun construction on all 14 bases. I think there are four major bases or something like that. How far this goes, I think it's really a question of this is their plan, but how far does reality intervene upon them? The real question I think we're facing is when and how does the U.S. get out of Iraq? The U.S. military faces a very severe recruitment crisis. Reenlistment is up, but recruitment is down, and the reason they're drawing down troops in Afghanistan is because they simply don't have the troops anymore. And the reason they're drawing down troops in Iraq is because they simply don't have any more troops. And I think the question is really on the table as to how much longer the U.S. can sustain its occupation there without there being some sort of
total disaster. So I no longer see these permanent bases as a given. I mean, I think that the U.S. is actually going to have to leave Iraq completely. I don't think the Bush administration is going to do that, but I don't think that it's possible to hang on under these conditions indefinitely. And I do not think that this is going to mellow out and then there'll be relative peace and quiet for the construction of, you know, bases which can then project power throughout the region. Because you see quite the opposite. What the U.S. involvement in Iraq now does is prevents it. It prevents the U.S. from projecting power further. Iran feels totally emboldened. It feels threatened to some extent because there's this U.S. occupation on either side of it, Afghanistan and Iraq. But it also feels emboldened because the U.S. is in a profound crisis of epic proportions. And so they are carrying ahead with their nuclear weapons program.
Yeah, Dave, another comment?
Well, you know, if the way we're all seeing this is accurate, we have to put it in a context that what we have running this country right now is the worst of hardcore psychopathic criminals. They are jeopardizing, they are indeed causing the death of any number of people for their own personal profits. That's what we've got running this country right now. Thank you for your good effort.
That's a description of psychopathic behavior.
Yeah. It is indeed.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Christine, a quick break and we'll return. I want to talk about the plight of women in Iraq and the setbacks that they have encountered under the liberation from the United States. Also want to talk about depleted uranium and white phosphorus, see if you encountered either of those in your visits to Iraq. We're talking with writer Christian Parenti, P-A-R-E-N-T-I, the book called The Freedom, Shadows and Hallucinations in Occupied Iraq. There's still room for your comment or question. 831-899-5792 or toll free at 1-888-579-2540. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show. You already know that Joe Rombi's La Mia Cucina in Pacific Grove serves the best Italian meals this side of Roma in an elegant, comfortable setting. What you may not know is that you can also enjoy Joe Rombi's incomparable cuisine in the comfort of your family room, dining room, or kitchen. Your only stop for such delicacies as portobello mushroom ravioli, spaghetti bolognese, crab cakes, and sand dabs is Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa in PG on 17th, just above Lighthouse. Drop by on your way home from work or any time. And if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. Joe Rombi has three rooms that can accommodate groups of any size from 16 to 60. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by La Piccola Casa, 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove. We all have dreams. And dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Tom Hartman.
The damage that this administration has done in just 5 years is mind-boggling.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
As a bit of a student of history, I don't think that we have ever had an administration that has done so much harm to the United States of America as this administration, as the Bush administration, to our reputation abroad, to our body politic at home. I mean, it is absolutely mind-boggling.
Tom Hartman, live every morning 9 to noon on KRXA 540, the new Radio Free America.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you interesting topics and personalities from the world of food, wine, and fun. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, winemakers, restaurateurs, famous chefs, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove. Stop by today for all your quality beverage needs and ask them about their single malt scotch tasting on March 22nd. And tell them the Tasty Planet sent you.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm glad you found it. Now tell a friend, and that'll make you a vice president for marketing in your zip code. My guest is Christian Parenti. His powerful new book is based on his own observations from life on the ground in occupied Iraq. It's called The Freedom, subtitled Shadows and Hallucinations in Occupied Iraq. We'll take more of your calls in a moment at 831-899-5792 or the toll-free line at 888-579-2540. Next, Christian, you describe vividly in the book a woman named Yanar Mohammed. Tell our listeners about Yanar and about the setbacks that women have encountered in the liberated Iraq.
Yanar Mohammed was an exile who went back to Iraq after the war and organized women. And what she found was that conditions, due to the insecurity that came with the end of the war, conditions deteriorated radically for women. There was an antecedent to this, which was at the end of the first Gulf War, Saddam began to recast himself as a political Islamist and began to give leeway to conservative clerics and tribal sheikhs who had very backward conservative notions about how women should be treated. But after, so there was a build-up to this. So then after the war, the pump was primed for a really reactionary response to the treatment of women. And one of the most horrible things that happened was the rise of what Yanar called misery gangs, gangs that would kidnap and rape women with impunity. And as lawlessness and rape increased quite horribly, many conservative families would feel dishonored if a woman member of their family had been raped, and they would then do what was called honor killings, and to clean the honor of the family, kill the victim.
Right.
And she had documented numerous of these cases and had actually established a shelter in Kurdistan before the war to give refuge to women who were facing honor killings, and then actually had one of these Kurdish parties, the more conservative of the Kurdish parties, the PUK, shut her shelter down. So yeah, the situation for women is horrible in Iraq, and it's the time. The Veterans Administration does not recognize depleted uranium as causing problems, but it awards checks to some of the specific elements that are associated with depleted uranium, but they can't recognize this as a problem because depleted uranium is so thoroughly established throughout the U.S. arsenal that it would require a generation-long rebuilding and restructuring of the U.S. military.
Well, and I just think it's important to underscore the bitter irony that we...
effects. That stuff will never go away, unfortunately. It's horrible, but one thing I think is it's almost possible to get just too pessimistic and for people to just retire completely from politics, taking a look at how horrible the details of this are on the ground, how blatantly corrupt people are who created this, how impervious they seem to be to any critique and the exposure of even their major scandals. But the fact of the matter is that this can't go on forever. The U.S. can't sustain this. And so it's very important for people to think with level heads about how the U.S. is going to get out, and for us to really force our elected representatives and force the media to deal with this head on, that the U.S. has to come up with a way to get out of Iraq sooner rather than later.
Well, I certainly agree with that. Just one other quick question before I want to jump to another call about white phosphorus, the so-called shake and bake routine that we know was used in Fallujah. Have you seen any evidence of the use of white phosphorus as a weapon, not as a way to light up the sky?
I did not, personally in my own reporting, come across that, but it was my friend Dar Jamail who first broke that story. And it's so routinely used that that most soldiers are unaware that there was any problem with it. guys carry phosphorus grenades. I guess the rules are that you're supposed to only use it against buildings and machinery and not against people. But, I mean, if you have white phosphorus rounds and someone is trying to kill you, I mean, the average soldier would find it a ridiculous distinction between shooting someone and hitting them with a napalm-like substance.
Steve and Salinas, join us and say hello to Christian Parenti.
Good afternoon. Thing. I just want to follow up thought to a previous caller. I'm thinking this Dubai debacle could be an opening because this will give the people a reason to expose the Bush connections to the Bin Laden family, to Carlyle, and every and all the money he might make if this thing goes through. And he approved this deal even before he knew about it.
Well, he knows where his silver spoons came from, Steve.
But if we can get the Congress people who are going to be discussing the matter to bring these things up, then more people will be aware of it.
I'm hopeful. At the same time, Rove is good at what he does, good at changing the subject. It could be that the Dubai ports was a way to change the subject from Dick Cheney last week. It certainly did achieve that. And we see repeatedly that the Democrats approach the brink of really challenging, confronting, and calling out the Bush administration, and then they retreat.
Okay, so but if we call, I call both of our senators, and we just bombard senators and congressmen with telling them to ask these questions, because they will have a chance to ask the questions now.
Christian?
Well, I think that the Dubai port thing is, it's basically just motivated by racism. I mean, you know, I mean, the United Arab Emirates have an airline that fly all over the country all the time, and people aren't concerned about them flying those airplanes into buildings. I think this is kind of a red herring. That's so clearly about whipping up anti-Arab hysteria, and I think that is the wrong stick to beat the Bush administration with.
I'm
on the East Coast here, and you know, Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer have been so aggressive on this in ways they haven't been on every other major scandal, where they should have been out front kicking the Bush administration in the teeth over Jack Abramoff, over Libby, over the contracting. I mean, we could go on and on and on. So I'm actually really kind of disgusted and disappointed in the way
this is all playing out. It doesn't have to be anti-Arab. It's just a question of asking, showing people that Bush and his people will benefit.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good point. And hopefully they'll get into that. I'll bet you it's going to be more about security and can we trust Arabs, rather than the fact that Jon Snow worked for CSX and stands to make money through his pension on this whole deal, and that this is just the same old insider, you know, old boy network wheeling and dealing.
That we can prove that Bush has ulterior motives.
Yeah, I mean, I understand your point, Steve. I think it does open up a lot of glaring issues, including the vulnerability of our ports and the failure of this administration to address that in the 5 years since 9/11. However, I understand Christian's point as well. We're out of time. Thank you, Steve.
Okay.
Christian, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate the book you've written. I recommend it to our listeners. It's called The Freedom, Shadows and Hallucinations in Occupied Iraq. Any website or other contact you want to give out?
I have a website out there that people can look up. There's ChristianParenti.com. It has my articles on there, or TheNation.com. All my articles are up there, and there's all sorts of other good writers there. So that's all I would say. And thank you very much for having me on your show, Peter. It's really a pleasure. And keep up the good work.
We'll do it again. And likewise, you keep up the good work. And stay safe.
Thanks.
Is the Peter B. Collins Show. Eugene Jarecki talks about why we fight next.
This is it. This is the world we live in. What are we going to do about it? It's time to stop picking parasites off your friend's hairy back and become an engaged cerebral citizen. Yes, there is more to American youth culture than McDonald's, malls, MySpace, and corporate monopolies. We have got to do better than the current apes that are in the process of turning this country into a banana republic. But we need your help. Call in, tell your friends, and listen to The Naked Ape, Sundays on KRXA.
Listen live, Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m.
Do you care about labor issues?
Does it matter to you that we're losing thousands of jobs a year in this country to NAFTA and CAFTA?
Should all working men and women have health coverage?
Do you care about local labor struggles where workers are being exploited?
Do you want to unionize?
If you care, then join us. I'm Jose Mendez.
And I'm Ren Bradley.
Every Sunday starting March 5th from 1 to 2 p.m. for our new show,
Labor Matters,
as we discuss these important issues.
From
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
After days of Iraqi violence, the president says,
Iraq remains a serious situation, but I'm optimistic.
Across the country, voices oppose the deal allowing an Arab company to run some U.S. ports. This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Dave Barrett. Backers of the top Shiite cleric, Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, were out today in Iraq. It's been 2 days since the Grand Mosque Dome was destroyed in Samarra. There's been violence throughout Iraq since then. CBS News correspondent Kimberly Dozier says there will be more restrictions aimed at curbing the trouble.
The Iraqi government has extended the curfew here in Baghdad and a few nearby provinces through tomorrow. There was less violence on this, the Muslim Day of Prayer, but more than two dozen people, most from the Sunni minority, did turn up dead throughout the capital. And there have been new attacks on a minor Shiite shrine to the south and two Sunni mosques here.
I'm Mark Noller at the White House. Despite the surge in bombings, bloodshed, and deaths in Iraq this week, President Bush describes himself as optimistic that democracy and peace will prevail there. He portrays the violence as part of the process.
No nation in history has made the transition to a free society without setbacks and false starts.
Addressing a gathering of the American Legion, Mr. Bush called this a moment of choosing for the Iraqi people. And he said the days ahead will be intense, difficult, and exhausting. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
Car bombers trying to drive into the world's largest oil processing facility in Saudi Arabia. Guards opened fire, detonating the bombs before they could reach their destination. CBS's Anthony Mason says even though this Al-Qaeda attack failed, oil prices jumped. Why?
Al-Qaeda has never attacked a Saudi oil facility before. Oil company offices, yeah, but the Abqaiq facility handles two-thirds of the Saudis' output. It's a massive facility, and any disruption there would have caused huge effects on the world market. That's what drove crude up $2 a barrel today.
Now this.
Honey?
Yeah?
Can you keep the kids busy? I'm doing our taxes.
Oh, that's right. We're using TurboTax this year.
Mm-hmm, and it's so easy. TurboTax asks these simple questions, and it automatically fills in all the right forms.
Really?
Uh-huh. TurboTax also checks for errors, and calculations are guaranteed accurate.
Well, what about deductions?
Found ones I didn't even think of.
Like those little tax deductions jumping on the sofa?
What?
The kids.
No, I remembered them.
TurboTax. Taxes made easy, taxes done right. Learn more at TurboTax.com or visit a retailer near you.
Last year at the PBR World Finals, world champion Justin McBride tamed the beast.
Folks, Justin McBride has done it.
Now the beast is back, and revenge will be anything but sweet. Strap yourself in for an all-new season of the PBR Built for Tough Series. The toughest cowboys take on the baddest bulls.
Mudslinger, this might be his best year ever.
An all-new season of the PBR, Saturday and Sunday at 8 Eastern, only on OLN.
Protesting the controversial port operations deal in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Teamsters came out.
We just think that this is a bad idea. This is a bad idea all the way around. I don't care if you're Republican, you're a Democrat. This is just not good for America. And if you're American, you ought to stand up and say something about this today.
Demonstrations were held in about 20 U.S. ports. Next week, the agreement allowing a firm from the United Arab Emirates was to go into effect, but the company offered to delay the takeover indefinitely. The White House agreed. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley says the president supports the deal, and now the task is to explain it on Capitol Hill.
At the end of the day, Congress and the public, when all is said and done, will come to the same conclusion he has, that this is something that can go forward and not jeopardize the national security of the United States.
In New Jersey, the owner of Port Newark has filed suit to keep the company from the UAE from operating a terminal there. It appears that South Dakota Governor Mike Rounds will sign a bill approved by the legislature which would ban nearly all abortions in his state.
I agree that Roe v. Wade should be overturned. The question will be, does this bill in its current form address that?
This is a measure designed to challenge the legality of abortion, and that means a potential challenge before the U.S. Supreme Court. Andrew Cohen is CBS News legal analyst.
It is unconstitutional. There's no doubt about it. But the idea is you have to get it sort of in the queue
so that at some point, if, for example, Justice John Paul Stevens dies or retires, and there's another change on the court and another Republican appointee, maybe things come out differently.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
You know, it's amazing how many things you can do online these days. Plastic surgery online is still a few years off, but I bet they're working on it. And what about doing all your car insurance business online? Well, it's already here. At GEICO.com, you can do most everything. Change drivers, change cars, change coverage, change your oil. I made that last one up. GEICO.com. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Last year at the PBR World Finals, world champion Justin McBride tamed the beast.
Folks, Justin McBride has done it.
Now the beast is back, and revenge will be anything but sweet. Strap yourself in for an all-new season of the PBR Built for Tough Series. The toughest cowboys take on the baddest bulls.
Buzzslinger, this might be his best year ever.
An all-new season of the PBR, Saturday and Sunday at 8 Eastern, only on OLN.
Ladies and gentlemen, and I use those terms loosely, this is the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. Coming up next hour, our weekly visit from Assemblyman John Laird and Brad from the bradblog.com. This hour, we're going to talk about why we fight. About the dirt cheap part, but this hour we're going to talk about a fascinating new film called Why We Fight, and it profiles the history of America's military-industrial complex, and filmmaker Eugene Jarecki expands on the original concept of the military-industrial concept that was introduced by outgoing President Dwight Eisenhower during the sunset of his term in January of 1960. Eugene, welcome to our program today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you, and this is the second of the films that you've made that I've seen. The Henry Kissinger film you did a couple of years ago was very powerful, and I thank you for it.
Oh, thank you for watching.
Well, that's the easy part.
Yeah, but if you don't do it, I don't have anything to do for a living.
Well, making Why We Fight must have been quite an exercise for you, because you managed to weave together, I think, a number of interesting elements that bring to the present day the legacy of what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex, the state of perpetual war that we've engaged in virtually since that time, and that concept of long-term war or unstoppable, unending war really has been reignited by George W. Bush's open-ended so-called war on terror.
Yes, I think Eisenhower has a great deal to teach us today, and that's why he really became from day one the hero of my film. Eisenhower brings to us a kind of perspective from another time under which we faced a threat. Eisenhower, of course, was running the country at the time that we were facing the Soviet Union, and he was, in the face of the possibility of real destruction from the Soviet Union, advocating restraint. He was advocating disarmament, and he said he was doing so as only someone who had been a soldier could know how to do, because he was very, very aware that a country can go wrong if it tries to pursue perfect security, which is, of course, never achievable.
And as I mentioned in the intro, you've kind of expanded that notion of simply the military and the munitions industry, the war-making industry in collusion. You add the Congress and think tanks, and if I may, I would add the media to the nexus of groups that really support this ongoing effort and the incredible waste of American taxpayer dollars.
Well, as it turns out, Eisenhower predicted all of it. And when you look at the speech, and I really urge people to download it online, simply go to Google and ask for Eisenhower Farewell Address, and you'll read it. It's an extraordinary piece of oratory by an extraordinary American statesman. And people may laugh when I say that, because Eisenhower's gotten a pretty simple rap over the years as being a kind of a doltish general who was sort of unremarkable president. And what I think my film shows and what we may all learn over time is that Eisenhower is really one of the visionaries of our time who did predict the role of think tanks. He did predict the collusion of Congress. That was, in fact, in the early drafts of the farewell address, the formulation military-industrial complex did not appear. It turns out it had actually been military-industrial-congressional complex, mm-hmm. because Eisenhower was keenly aware of the role of Congress in making possible the aspirations of the military-industrial elite. And so he predicted those things and in his own way predicted the media itself. The very first words of the farewell address are Eisenhower's thank you to the television networks for having brought his words to the public for all the years he'd been in the White House. Mm. And in many ways that sense of collaboration with the media is implicit in the speech as well, if a bit ironically.
Yeah. And the think tanks are an important component as well.
The think tanks, again, predicted by Eisenhower, represent something that he would call the disastrous rise of misplaced power, which is the danger that if you build it, they will come. That if you build a massive, pulsing military-industrial machine and you park it in the driveway, the kids will drive it, and it will become a kind of tempting tool for ideologues. And that is what we see in America today. We have think tanks that have an extraordinary influence on this administration, advocating a kind of war that, lo and behold, just coincidentally, is exactly the kind of war being proposed in the brochures of the military-industrial giants.
Now, as we proceed into the hour, I want to talk further about your film, and I'm especially pleased that you used retired Air Force, I guess she's a colonel, Karen Kutkowski, prominently in the documentary. She's appeared on our program on many occasions, and I think she's a great American who really tells it like it is.
Yeah.
But, Eugene, I wanted to give you an opportunity here at the top of our conversation just to talk about events on the ground today and the way that the situation appears to be spiraling out of control. And there's some discussion about whether the term full-scale civil war applies or not. What's your take?
Well, I think one of the things that the thinkers in Washington did when they launched this war against the better judgment of the American people, and I say that because the amount of lies that had to be told to convince the public to go to war against our better judgment, the extent of those lies really underscores that our better judgment was not to go to war. So why did they do that? They did that because they had a theory of the world and of how to maintain a kind of a dominant America, a role for America in the world. And what they have done, unfortunately, was miscalculated in many ways. They had hoped, for example, to show in Iraq the extraordinary power of the American arsenal. Instead, it became a demonstration project in American weakness, that we could barely take quick action against a fourth-rate power beleaguered after a decade of sanctions. And so for countries that otherwise are adversarial to us, that is actually a moment of comfort, not of shock and awe. And likewise, they also thought the war in Iraq would be won overnight, and that we would see people dancing in the streets. Ken Edelman, who appears in my film, predicted that the war would be a cakewalk. I think a lot of those folks have disqualified themselves as sound thinkers on our foreign policy, but unfortunately the cost to the rest of us may be extraordinarily grave. What we see in Iraq today is a situation of tremendous instability, and one of the things that it did, of course, is on the one hand it aggravated pre-existing ethnic and religious tensions, but it also, by being not resolved overnight, it opened up the country to outside influences like Iran, so that the power of the Iranian Shia population and Shari population is now something which, as it concerned Saddam Hussein for decades, now concerns American policymakers, who increasingly see Iran taking a guiding hand in Iraq, exactly something that the thinkers advising this policy would not have wanted. So we do face an unstable situation, and civil war is, of course, a natural consequence when you unseat any leader who has an iron grip on his population. And I think it's very important to recognize, you know, Americans always feel the need to say the disclaimer, now, of course, Saddam was a bad guy. And what I would say about that is Saddam was a bad guy with whom the United States did business for a long time, and it's a stain on our history that we did. But yes, he was a bad guy. But one of the things that that bad guy had was a rather iron fist containing the tensions that exist within his country in much the same way Tito did. And when you get rid of a leader like that, you unleash the furies.
Yeah, you blow the lid off these ethnic tensions that have been boiling for a long, long time, and it's very hard to cap them once that occurs. And Eugene Jarecki, I believe you were on hold and perhaps had a chance to listen to the network news before you came on our program. There was the president today saying, yeah, we've had some setbacks, but I'm optimistic. Now, if we take him at his word that he doesn't drink anymore, is that the Prozac talking?
You know, God knows what it is. We live in a world where the truth and the regard for truth has been so eroded, and the spin zone of Washington is so corrupt that by now you probably will come out ahead if you simply bet on the opposite of what anyone you hear in Washington says.
That's interesting. We're going to take a break and return. Eugene Jarecki, the filmmaker whose new film is called Why We Fight, it is showing at the Lumiere Theater in San Francisco currently, and we'll tell you about information, how you can find out when it will come your way and when the DVD version will be released. Why We Fight is the name of the movie. Your calls and comments are welcome. Eugene Jarecki's with us until 5 o'clock. 831-899-5792 is our number on the Central Coast. That's a local call, 899-KRXA. Or call me toll-free from Eureka or anywhere else at 1-888-579-2540. 888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. Are you looking for money for college? Every year, billions of dollars in financial aid go unclaimed because parents just don't know how to properly access those funds. Mistakes are made in filling out applications. Deadlines are overlooked. And ultimately, it's the student who loses out on desperately needed funds. R.J. Moyer, president of AboutCollegeFunding.com, offers solutions to your financial aid dilemma.
If you're the parent of a college-bound high school junior or senior, critical deadlines are rapidly approaching, and we do specialize in late-stage college funding planning. Regardless of your income, assets, or home equity, I can help you send your child to the college of his or her choice without spending your life savings. But you must take action now.
AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. Call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just 2 blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville. 419 KRXA 540 checks your traffic on this beautiful Friday afternoon. We've got Stephen Taylor, but I'm missing Amy Knight. Stephen, is it true she got a free round trip to the Olympics in Torino?
Well, that's just speculation at this point. I cannot confirm
I
that.
I thought I saw her in the crowd last night during the figure skating final.
It might have been her evil twin.
Okay.
So,
how are we doing today?
Well, there could be some delays for some folks taking Highway 17 south out of the Bay Area. Southbound Highway 17 at Glenwood Drive, a boulder apparently hit a passing van and caused it to overturn, so emergency vehicles are there trying to get all, and the workers trying to get all of that out of the way, both the vehicle involved and the giant rock. A little further south, Carmel Valley Village, El Caminito Road at Ford Road, accident with a couple vehicles involved. CHP is on the way there. And let's see, Elkhorn, Castroville Boulevard, Paradise Road, another accident. This vehicle ran into a pole near the intersection and is apparently causing
thank you, Stephen. I'm Peter B. Collins, and David Bowie gives my take on much of what the American military tries to do these days, putting out fire with gasoline. We continue with filmmaker Eugene Jarecki. His new documentary is called Why We Fight, and this is getting a major theatrical distribution. Is that right, Eugene?
Yes, it is. It's all across the country in about 200 cities.
Mm-hmm. And then sometime maybe this summer it'll be out on DVD?
Yep. After it does its theatrical life, it then goes to DVD and then TV.
Okay. DVD first and then cable?
Yes, it does. It does that.
Okay. I have a hard time keeping track anymore of how all that stuff works.
Of how they do it. I know. I do as well. I do want to mention that tonight we're actually doing these two screenings at the Lumiere that I'm doing question and answer at afterward.
Okay.
So at both the 7 and the 9:25 show, if people come, it's very exciting when audiences are there and get to participate in this Q&A with me as a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. You just get a whole different kind of perspective than on other nights.
Now, the origin of the film name is there was a Frank Capra-produced was it military training or military propaganda during World War II, a flick called Why We Fight?
Yep, Capra made a series of movies called the Why We Fight series, and he made it because the military wanted him to help explore the reasons why America should enter World War II, particularly for the young recruits who were being brought off to war at that time. And, you know, Capra was always an advocate, a great defender of democracy and of the little guy. If you look at his films, It's a Wonderful Life, where Jimmy Stewart, as George Bailey, is trying to protect Little Bedford Falls, basically from Walmart, and you look at it, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, the same is true, trying to protect a little creek back home from the damming by special interests. Capra was always trying to defend the little guy and democracy, and when he made the Why We Fight films, he took that concern global, and he asked Americans to be willing to stand up to defend democracy. And, you know, my film is called Why We Fight in large part because I'm a huge fan of Frank Capra, and I think if he were alive today, although he's a better movie maker, I think he would have made very much the kind of movie I've made, a warning about democracy in peril, and a calling, really a sort of a clarion call to Americans to be willing to rise up and to defend democracy when it's in peril, even if it's in peril here at home.
And sprinkled through the film are average people and military folks and some political leaders whom you pose the question to. And at least in the film, you never get the same answer twice.
No, I think there's a great deal of confusion on the part of Americans about just why we do what we're doing. And, you know, I think during World War II, when Capra asked the question, there's no doubt the answer was much clearer. It was much simpler. I mean, we talked to people all across the country, and we asked them, why are we at war? Why do we fight? And people just, they're very confused by it, and they're suffering, and they don't know what to make of it. Very often, the first word out of their mouth is freedom. But then you ask one more question, and immediately you discover that that word freedom is just kind of an impulse we all have been taught to feel, and we should feel it, and we should want to feel it about our country, but all too often right now we don't.
Mm-hmm. Your film also richly stitches in many comments from people as diverse as Reagan and Clinton and our current president. Gore Vidal is featured in several clips. Richard Perle, who is in my book one of the darkest of the neocons, is quoted several times. Now, as you constructed this, I was reminded of Robert Greenwald's approach to documentary filmmaking. meeting, where he often features the voices of the other side to build his case about what's wrong with their very own positions. How did you get William Kristol of the Weekly Standard, Rupert Murdoch's subsidized publication, to sit for an interview, and did he know where you were going?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very open with people about how I feel, but I think they sense that my goal is to create a kind of dialogue on screen between differing viewpoints on a subject of common concern that we all have concerns about. And I welcome divergent viewpoints. I don't think I'm right. I don't think other people are wrong. I think these issues are very textured. And I may not totally agree with what some people are saying to me, but I try to explore what they're saying responsibly and with enough depth that the viewer may hear it and may not be able to agree, but they can't just disagree and dismiss it outright. I like to create a kind of dialogue that reminds us that dialogue itself is the point. The medium is the message. The more of a vibrant democratic dialogue I can put on screen, the more I'll inspire democracy in the society I care about. So that's what I do in reaching out to people who don't think like I do, and then putting people on screen who themselves don't think like each other.
And one of the sequences that I found chilling and fascinating was you go to a bomb factory.
Yeah.
And you interview an older woman with Coke bottle glasses and a Vietnamese-American immigrant, and they talk about their role in making bombs. Describe that for our listeners.
Well, I think this all comes down to sort of the banality of evil, that everyday people are involved in the enterprise of American war making, and they're like you and me. They are you and me. If I could tell you the number of grandmas I met in weapons plants across this country, it's quite remarkable, and they all go to bed at night thinking and hoping that we are fighting on the side of the angels, and that's a very valid hope for them to have, and for much of our history, we have done angelic work. The problem is that we've also done very complicated work like any nation has. And it's so important that this country have a kind of culture of tough love, of looking deeply at ourselves and holding ourselves to the highest standards. And naturally, you cannot argue that the conduct of the war in Iraq and the corporate profiteering that's gone on around it have left open to question our motives as a country.
Mm-hmm.
And the tragedy is that the well-meaning people who run our industry of war and who work in the military and who drop the bombs and who do the heavy lifting, their hopes and dreams are in many ways hijacked and exploited by political actors in Washington who don't want the world to see what they're doing and are less than upfront about what they're doing. And I even don't consider them villains. I consider them kind of useful actors in a machine which itself has gone terribly corrupt. And that's what Eisenhower warns us about, and it's the reason that his vision really guides the film.
Yes, it certainly does. And Eugene, a few years back, I went on a tour of the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory,
yeah,
which is operated under dubious terms by the University of California, and it was striking. Because other than the security arrangements that it takes to get in there, it was like going to a Silicon Valley facility. And I went into the building where they developed the nuclear triggers. And I met a gaggle of scientists, very nice people. They wanted to make sure that I left with a little tchotchke. And it's a coaster that, you know, says Lawrence Livermore Lab and, you know, we're the ones who make the nuclear triggers or something like that. And they were as proud of their work and unconscious of the dark side of it, at least from anything I could tell. And your phrase a moment ago about the banality of this really hits home. It was just very routine. They could have been making dishwashers.
Absolutely.
And they would have felt the same way.
And this is something that Eisenhower was concerned about. We have a lot of footage in my film of air shows in America and arms shows and the way that everyday people go to these shows. And, yeah, like you say, we interview at one point a Halliburton magician who's performing magic tricks at the Halliburton booth at a trade show. And his magic tricks are there to woo people into learning more about Halliburton's corporate message.
Eugene, it's time for a break. We'll pick up there as we continue with Eugene Jarecki, the filmmaker. It's called Why We Fight.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
I'm Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Show. Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m., we'll explore Monterey Bay regional wine and food, markets, restaurants, menus, and prices. I'll interview winemakers, chefs, and other key players. We'll put food and wine together, and then we'll take them apart. If it's handcrafted beer or goat's milk and it's good, let's talk about it. Join me every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. to discuss food, wine, and fun in the Monterey Bay region, and especially delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by.
No sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Oh, thank you, Edwin. That's the late, great Edwin Starr, the man who gave us the phrase, "Feats don't fail me now." We continue our conversation with filmmaker Eugene Jarecki. His powerful new feature documentary, I guess is the best way to describe it, is called Why We Fight. It premieres at the Lumiere in San Francisco tonight. Watch your community theater and art houses in the coming weeks. And as he told us, it should be out on DVD by summertime. If you'd like to talk with him, I've enjoyed our conversation, but I'm happy to share Eugene Jarecki with you. You can call us at 831-899-5792, 899-5792 on the Central Coast. And my toll-free line's open, too, at 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. And, Eugene, as you look at the current picture in Iraq, why are we there? is this simply an extension of the permanent war, and was it the need of the plutocrats to empty the inventory at the Pentagon so they could reload it and create profits for Halliburton and Bechtel and Blackwater and many of these other companies that have very clear ties to the leadership of the Bush administration?
You know, I think at the end of the day, that vision of the military-industrial complex, in a way, I think is a kind of a conspiracy theory, which isn't really how the machine operates. And I'm kind of hoping that if my film does one thing, it disabuses us of the notion that there's a very linear kind of evil scheme at work where geniuses sitting in offices in Washington are planning wars for profit. I think that is a kind of a design that doesn't really account for how the thing really works, and it isn't really true to Eisenhower's warning. What Eisenhower is saying is not a conspiracy theory. He's saying that if you, as a society, in an effort to pursue security, if you go too far and you make such a massive, permanently prepared military instrument, it is so expensive to do that, that it becomes an incredible focus of national resources, taking those resources away from other parts of your national life. So before long, the military seems like, and indeed is, the solution to all problems. If you rob the infrastructure in America of funding and you give it to the military, when the floods come, send in the guard. If a young man wants an education, like the young man William in my film, who's trying to survive after the death of his mother and wants to get educated, if he can't get education in failing schools, let the Army teach him. And so what happens is before long, this creates a kind of a tilt in the society toward militarism, and it lowers our threshold of resistance to the militarization of everyday life. If troops are helping to park your car, carry your bags, and get your cat out of a tree, it starts to become more normal to see them be the solution to international conflict as well. And that's what I think the military-industrial complex becomes, is a force that corrupts the way in which we think about war as one of the options in our international life, but it also corrupts the way in which we think of military decisions within our halls of Congress, because it corrupts the way that Congress people make decisions and how they're incentivized to make decisions.
I understand your point, and I guess I feel a need to take issue with it in part around what I consider to be an elective war in Iraq.
Yeah.
And because it's the mislead, many of us who are skeptical of the Bush administration can understand the linkage between 9/11 and the attacks on Afghanistan. But there is no such justification or linkage for Iraq, and that's why so many people, even who are not conspiracy theory nuts, look at this picture and say, well, gosh, this doesn't make sense. There weren't any frickin' WMD. They knew that. There wasn't a nuclear program, or nuclear, if you want to call it that, and they knew that. And so they now appear surprised at the revelation that there weren't any WMD and there wasn't a serious nuke program.
But think about it this way, Peter. There have always been hawks. What you have to ask yourself in a hawkish situation that has become a war is, where were the checks and balances? Where are the forces of opposition? And so that's where the phenomenon of the military-industrial complex lies, more in the notion of profiteering. I mean, profiteering has gone on throughout the history of war, and the question is, at what point does profiteering become so driving that the tail begins to wag the dog and you end up with a situation where wars seem to be driven by a lot of that spirit for profit and gain rather than principle. And what I'm telling you is not that there isn't a corrupt force behind why we are in Iraq. Of course there is. And of course, the contemplation about the relevance of Iraq in the oil-rich region of the Middle East is, of course, a part of why we're there. It's also a part of why we're there that there are a number of thinkers in Washington who fear China and wanted us to gain a foothold in that oil-rich region as a kind of a strategic gain for empire, to make sure that we can hold on to the imperial footprint of the United States and do so stronger and quicker than our rising rivals. Those are all the kind of thoughts that go in, but what greases the skids of all this is the corruption of our national life by the forces, the immense amount of power wielded by the military-industrial sector, and that influence as it's perceived by Congress. Because it is Congress, after all, who makes possible what the military-industrial sector wants. Mm-hmm. And how do they do that? They do that because the military industry learned long ago. And this is why you don't need a contemporary conspiracy, because the seeds of this were all planted long ago, that you build a situation in which jobs are in every home district in the United States in the building of, say, the B-2 bomber, which has a piece of it made in every U.S. state. That means that when the B-2 comes up for review in a society that desperately needs to manage its finances well, and
it's
people
untouchable.
Say again?
It's untouchable.
It's untouchable because everybody's getting a piece of the action, exactly.
Right.
Now, what does that mean? That means that long before you ever need to have a shadowy conspiratorial conversation, the deck has already been stacked toward the continuation of that system and so many others. And that leads you to war, because what it does is it creates a tempting tool for ideologues. It means if you have hawks, all of a sudden there is a demonstration project possible in which their aspirations can be realized at the touch of a button.
We're talking with Eugene Jarecki here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Well, let me extend this now to an imperfect and complex character named Jack Murtha, who, by the way, does not appear in your film. But he's a guy, you know, an ex-Marine, a very revered veteran, a guy who's been in Congress for years, who never saw a Pentagon program he couldn't support. He's one of the top five recipients of Pentagon-related campaign contributions, one of the top three campaign contribution recipients for money related to the pointless Star Wars missile defense system, and yet he separated himself from the military-industrial complex over the war in Iraq, and he came to realize it late, but he believes that he was snookered. And so he doesn't see a rational reason of why we went into Iraq, even though he voted for it at the time. And he is now almost apoplectic at the way events have overtaken his previous positions.
It's, you know, we're seeing this all over the country, and there are a number of characters in my film who felt caught up in the post-9/11 hawkish sort of snowball effect toward the implementation of the war in Iraq. And that was a runaway process of aggression and vengeance, which, you know, was a way in which this White House exploited public grief and anguish. And did so in a way to kind of rally support for a war that had been pre-planned.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very, very tragic moment for American democracy. It's a very tragic moment for the people of Iraq, who, after all, are being told that we are exporting democracy to them. And yet they see that in order to do that export, we need to undermine the very democracy here at home that we're supposedly exporting.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a tragedy for democracy that this subversion went on, and it's sad that only too little too late are we now hearing members of Congress wake up from the kind of military industrial imperial ether that they have been sleeping under for a long time. And I, you know, hats off to Senator for Mr. Murtha for doing that, and hats off to others who are now coming to their senses. But, you know, this is a process that needs to have happened a lot earlier, and the public had outcry about it, and they were ignored by their leaders. And in many ways, that's a stain on America that we have to think about what to do about as we go forward, but better late than never.
And Eugene, as I heard you talking about, your thoughts, and I hear what you're saying, and I generally agree with you, but I do think that the Iraq War does represent kind of the culmination of the intent of all these forces. And I'm looking at my notes from watching the film last night. 71 companies have contracts in Iraq and Afghanistan. Almost all of them have a former member of Congress who's either a principal or a lobbyist for those companies. Halliburton and KBR are the number one contractor. And you pointed out this study commissioned by Dick Cheney when he was the outgoing Secretary of Defense in 1992. He spent $9 million on a study done by who? KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, the Halliburton subsidiary, on contracting out military support services. And so you can at least see the the incentives and the potential benefits to these interested parties from the elective war that they led us into.
Yes, but it just doesn't work. The thing what I'm saying is that it doesn't work in the simplistic way that people want it to for the purposes of having an easy explanation. You know, Dick Cheney already made his money from Halliburton years ago. There is some residual tiny amount of money coming into him in the form of extraneous stuff from when he was there. But it's
His deferred compensation is actually almost as much as his annual salary as vice president.
Yeah, but that's tiny numbers. I mean, it's nothing compared. He made $60 to $70 million in a 5 to 6 year period.
Right, and he's got $25 million in options in his deferred account.
Absolutely, but that's not. In other words, he's not sitting in the White House right now running a war so that it can be beneficial to him tomorrow or beneficial to him going forward. What he's already done is he's part of a culture that sees that profitability and the imperial gains for this country are hand in hand. And that is a kind of a cultural conspiracy that's much more systemic than sort of proactive. You don't need shadowy transactions going on to make this thing work. It's so corrupt. It has been so pre-designed to be corrupt that when you name all the companies that are profiteering and you name all the sort of special interests involved, what it shows you is why there was no resistance. It's not that all of those people get together, you know, make evil plans and then have to tell their spouses at night, I'm working on the side of the devil in the world. They actually think, I'm working on the side of the angels because I make the surgical weapon that's going to do what the neocons have said will happen. We'll overthrow the country and the people will thank us.
We got to stop there for a break. Sure. We'll pick up in a moment with Eugene Jarecki. This is a fascinating conversation. Why don't you join in? 831-899-5792 for the Central Coast. Elsewhere, call us toll free, 888-579-2540. The new film is called Why We Fight. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Tom Hartman,
chairman of Citicorp, Sanford Weill, says, I think companies are realizing that we all have to be salesmen for America and not just sit back and rely on the government. I would point out to Mr. Weill, chairman of Citigroup, that his company is sending American jobs to other countries.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
Isn't this a great thing? We can use Indian labor for white-collar jobs while we're using Chinese labor for blue-collar jobs. I'm sorry, this just creeps me out.
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic on the Friday ride home. Here's Stephen Taylor.
All right, it's flowing the stream of cars heading down out of the South Bay into the Santa Cruz area, southbound Highway 17, just before Redwood Estates. Stalled vehicle in the right lane. Going further south in Felton, Graham Hill Road at Mount Hermon Road, an accident involving five vehicles. CHP is on the way to help there. Salinas, Russell Road at Harrison Road, an accident with CHP now on the scene, and the tow truck has been called. Also, Hollister 25 at Highway 156, large box in the lanes, causing everybody to slow down and hit the brakes. This report is sponsored by Preparation H. Preparation H cream relieves burning, itching, and also gives you maximum strength pain relief on contact. It's the most complete Preparation H relief ever. Steven Taylor with traffic on Classic Rock or traffic on KRXA 540.
Hey, give me some Classic Rock, will you?
In the background.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, rocking the nation from the left coast. Our music at the moment from Michael Fronte and Spearhead. They're appearing in Santa Cruz tonight. Check them out if you're in the hood. Great world beat music infused with political commentary. We're talking with filmmaker Eugene Jarecki, J-A-R-E-C-K-I. The film is called Why We Fight. And do you have a website, Eugene, that you'd like to mention?
Absolutely. It's whywefight.com.
Great. Whywefight.com. And what will people find there?
Well, people find much more information than you get to have in the movie. You know, it used to be that when you were a filmmaker and you encountered all the stuff you wanted to put in the movie that you couldn't, you would rip your hair out and then pay a lot of money to therapists, and the therapists are making a fortune off this. Now that we have the special feature section on the DVD and the website, the therapists are losing a great deal of money because that's where all the best stuff goes.
And how much more footage would we find when the DVD is released?
A tremendous amount. It'll be a very rich DVD. You know, we filmed a great deal in the country of Iraq. There are a lot of interviews with Iraqi people and stories told in that way. And there's also additional story material and some of the deeper insights into the very inner workings of the military-industrial complex. And a lot of that goes into the DVD. And I sense that I'm frustrating you with the way I look at this. And I think the reason that's happening is that I have taken it upon myself to try to correctly reflect Eisenhower's vision, which is so condemning and so deeply disconcerting about where we are today, that in fact I find it more disconcerting than the way I used to look at it also, which was more like shady characters in Washington doing ill. This problem is so much more fundamentally woven into the heart of our system that I just want to make sure people are armed to really go about solving it, because if they think it's going to be fixed by fixing George Bush or fixing Dick Cheney or anybody else, it's like the Sorcerer's Apprentice. You get rid of those guys, there'll be new ones in their place, because it's the job is pre-designed, mm-hmm. and the people fit the job. And it's all been very streamlined away from the need for shadowy conversations. Everything has been made into the banality of a much more evil enterprise that is eroding the very heart of our democratic republic. And that's Eisenhower's concern. And the only way to go about fixing a systemic issue is to find systemic solutions, not to find the bad guys, because the bad guys will always be there, and it's just what lets them, you know, how did they get to be promoted and how do they run the country? And it's not enough for people to say the election was stolen or this or that. Half this country certainly supports that George Bush was elected president. And that is a very remarkable reality if you understand how much corruption went into the making, for example, of the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's something that's a huge gulf between what is really happening and what the public understands, and that is a democratic crisis.
But you seem to be parsing between corruption and collusion or conspiracy, and I do appreciate your point, and I fully respect your point of view. I just guess my sense here is that this Iraq War is it's bringing to fruition these different elements that you describe. And because it is, you know, it was elective on the president's part.
Yes.
This was not the country that attacked us. They didn't have anything to do with 9/11. And so it is a diversion. And for that reason, since the arguments that were offered for the reasons why we had to go to war shifted 29 times,
yes.
and now we're at liberation and democracy, and
yes,
neither
sir.
Is the case on the ground in Iraq, it does leave people like me saying, well, gosh, the motive must have been to feed the Carlyle Group, to, you know, do an inventory clearance at the Pentagon.
No, it doesn't work that way. It's much more sound, I think, to think of it as a tempting tool for fanatics. a tempting tool for people who don't trust democracy. George Bush understood, going through his first administration, that he wasn't doing well with the public. He understood that a military response after 9/11 of an extreme order was better for being George Bush and being popular than not doing that. And the problem is, how is he able to do that? Why didn't the Democrats in Congress slow him? Why didn't the Republicans in Congress slow him? What is the role of the military-industrial sector in greasing the skids that a fanatical enterprise can be run on?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the bigger question. And I would say to you, there's so many ways that this works. If you're a politician in Washington, and because the industrial and political elites in this country occupy such a rarefied space away from the rest of us. If you're the golfing buddy of a guy who runs a defense company, on the golf cart, you're going to talk about surgical weapons as kind of a product line. And if you talk about that, he's your friend. If he's your friend, you're going to trust the things he says. If you then come into work on Monday and there's the idea of a war using such weapons and the promises of precision are in the air, you're likely to vote in favor of that war. And that is part of the way influence takes place. But it's not that you and he sat on the golf cart and he had to say to you, please vote for the war so that my weapons will tumble off the inventory shelves.
No, it's too clubby for that. They don't have to go to that explicit level.
I understand that, and I agree with you, and that's why what I'm saying is the conspiracy is a conspiracy of a latent and fundamental kind,
mm-hmm.
not of a kind that needs shadowy actors, because any good conspiracy of human endeavor needs the participants to have deniability. And no one is sitting in a dark room somewhere engineering that. It's almost like the way our bodies evolved in a Darwinian sense. The system has evolved quite brilliantly. And everybody has a kind of a hands-off, you know, I look at it this way. I talked to the pilots who fired the opening shots
right.
on Baghdad in the film. They're remarkable people to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized talking to them, from their perspective, they dropped the bombs, but they didn't make the decision. That's made back in Washington. And they trust that it's made in a democratic process. And they would say to me, if you think that democratic process is flawed, it will be self-correcting. Those people will get voted out, and better people will come in, and so forth.
Eugene, I've really been enjoying this, but Tara's been holding forever, so let's get to her. Tara in Bayside, thanks.
Good.
You're on the air.
Hi. Eugene, I think your analysis is brilliant. However, the only place I disagree with you is I think that it's completely out of control, and you're absolutely right. I'd like to make a couple other points. One is that I think that he is a con only in the way that a con man is a con. He's really a revolutionary. And what we've had is a revolution. That's why he could stand up there when everybody in the country was saying we don't want to go to war and say, isn't it wonderful? We have freedom of speech.
And Richard Pearl uses the word radical.
War with anybody, including Afghanistan. And if we didn't have the war machine, we wouldn't have gone to war with anybody.
Eugene, a comment?
I can't hear her very well, but I heard it was a crime against humanity. Is that right?
Yes, and she said that if we didn't have the wherewithal, the military might, that we probably wouldn't have used it.
Yes, I think, you know, that's a crucial point, and it really goes to this idea that Eisenhower feared, which is that if you overemphasize the military as one of the elements of your national toolkit over all others, you know, right now we spend of all the money on...
Staff at ThinkerToys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from ThinkerToys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from ThinkerToys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. ThinkerToys is open daily from 10 to 7.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS
CBS News, I'm Peter King. An attack on a Shiite mosque followed by three violent days and scores of Iraqi deaths. Officials have extended an unusual daylight curfew for another day because they say it seems to be working. CBS News correspondent Kimberly Dozier.
For ordinary Iraqis we spoke to, the curfew is providing some relief, but the violence certainly isn't over. Tonight, militants fired rockets at a Shiite shrine, causing minor damage south of Baghdad, and there have been attacks on two Sunni mosques here in the capital. Kimberly Dozier, CBS News, Baghdad.
Oil prices are up more than $2 a barrel after an aborted suicide bombing attack on Saudi Arabia's busiest oil refinery. A guard killed the bombers by shooting their cars and blowing them up. CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason.
The Saudis repelled this attack. That's very encouraging. But it still scares the oil markets that, the world's biggest oil producer, the only one with any spare capacity, has become a target.
Aileron oil analyst Phil Flynn.
Al-Qaeda has threatened the oil industry, and they're trying to follow through on their threats.
The Saudi oil minister says the attack didn't affect operations, although one pipeline was damaged. Dubai Ports World was supposed to start managing six U.S. seaports next week, but instead it's delaying the planned takeover. White House spokesman Scott McClellan says it'll give the administration more time to tell Congress why the deal doesn't threaten security. Today in about 20 cities, Teamsters protested the Dubai deal, saying the U.S. companies, or that U.S. companies, should be given a better chance to bid. A sex scandal rocks one of the Army's elite divisions.
Seven members of the 82nd Airborne Division have been charged with violations of the Uniform Code of Military Justice for knowingly engaging in sex for money on a public website.
Major Tom Earnhardt says the charges include sodomy, wrongfully engaging in sex acts for money while being filmed. They say the video was posted on the internet, but Earnhardt calls the incident isolated. The Army's recommended that all be discharged. A new addition to the world of military special operations, CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula reports on the newest member of this exclusive club.
It's a first for the Marine Corps, a special operations unit. Defense Secretary Rumsfeld traveled to Camp Lejeune here in North Carolina to officially establish the command. It'll be the Marines' version of Navy SEALs and the Army's Green Berets. The new Special Ops Command will eventually include 2,500 Marines.
Americans at the Olympics, Julia Mancuso wins the gold in the women's giant slalom. The U.S. curling team takes the bronze. Chad Hedrick gets the silver in the men's 10,000-meter speed skating.
With just two more days of competition, Germany has a narrow lead in the race for gold. The Germans have 9 gold medals here in Torino, followed by the U.S., Austria, and Russia, each with 8.
CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman in Torino. This is CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic weekend getaway? Well, how about 3 days and 2 nights in Las Vegas at a major strip resort? And what about, you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest 5-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge, stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 877-33-GO-WIN. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 877-33-GO-WIN for all the exciting details. That's 877-33-GO-WIN. Call now.
The boyfriend of Virginia's infamous cell phone bandit is thinking about a new number. WTOP's Neil Augenstein reports that you won't find it on his speed dial.
12 years in prison for Dave Williams for conspiring with Candace Martinez to rob 4 Northern Virginia banks. The 19-year-old cried and apologized again and again to the judge, saying it only took him one day in prison to realize he'd sinned, and in his words, how bad a person I am. Judge Gerald Bruce Lee told Williams that robbing banks isn't glamorous and that Bonnie and Clyde died in a hail of bullets. Candace Martinez has pleaded guilty to the same crimes. She's due to be sentenced March 3rd. Neil Augenstein for CBS News, Alexandria, Virginia.
Police in Lawrence, South Carolina have arrested an elementary school teacher after parent claimed that she had sex with one of her 11-year-old students. The police chief there says the 36-year-old teacher resigned today. She has no criminal history. No prior complaints were made against her. Peter King, CBS News.
Honey?
Yeah?
Can you keep the kids busy? I'm doing our taxes.
Oh, that's right. We're using TurboTax this year.
Mm-hmm. And it's so easy. TurboTax asks these simple questions, and it automatically fills in all the right forms.
Really?
Uh-huh. TurboTax also checks for errors, and calculations are guaranteed accurate.
What about deductions?
Found ones I didn't even think of.
Like those little tax deductions jumping on the sofa?
What?
The kids.
No, I remembered them.
TurboTax. Taxes made easy. Taxes done right. Learn more at TurboTax.com or visit a retailer near you.
Last year at the PBR World Finals, world champion Justin McBride teamed the Beast.
Folks, Justin McBride has done it.
Now the Beast is back, and revenge will be anything but sweet. Strap yourself in for an all-new season of the PBR Built for Tough Series. The toughest cowboys take on the baddest bulls.
Buzzsmaker, this might be his best year ever.
An all-new season of the PBR, Saturday and Sunday at 8 Eastern, only on OLN.
Progressive Talk Radio, this is how we do it. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. 5:06, we're live on KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. We're live on KGOE 1480, Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County. Yes, it is Friday night, and every week we make time for a visit from Assemblyman John Lair, the Democrat from Santa Cruz, who chairs the Assembly Budget Committee. John Laird, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Peter. How are you?
Well, you've had a busy week, and today is the deadline for submitting bills to the bill mill in the legislature. It must have been really busy.
It was. That deadline just passed about 6 minutes ago, and I know that my last couple of bills were dropped in the 10 minutes before the 5 o'clock hour, and there's almost always a line right at the end, but you know, we have a deadline. All bills have to be introduced by it, and it'll make for some interesting stories, as there'll probably be almost 3,000 bills introduced between the two houses, and they'll all gradually float out into public the next few days.
And using a baseball metaphor, how many pitches do you make every year?
Very good. I actually do the maximum. We're allowed 40 bills a two-year session, and I do 20 each year and just introduced 20. And I'm one exception because they're bills that get to be introduced by committees, and the budget committee introduces 30 trailer bills, which this next week I will quite likely take up on the floor and move to the Senate, so they'll sit there. But I take my full 20 as individual bills.
And a trailer bill isn't something you hitch on the back. It's a clarifying bill, right?
Exactly. It's when we adopt the budget, there is a main budget bill or a main conference report, and I introduce that, and it does not count against my bill limit. And then we have bills that implement different parts of the budget, because sometimes you have to have an explanation of how the program will work once you come to a dollar amount on certain things, and by subject matter, these bills follow. That's all that's negotiated when you're negotiating a budget. Last year, I presented every bill on the floor on the day that we adopted the budget, and it was 14 different bills that took to do the whole thing.
And like a term paper, do you have to have it complete when you file it, or can you file it and amend it a little later, as long as you get the topic and the general body of the legislation introduced?
Oh, what a very good question, because if you'd asked me what's the one thing that surprised you a little when I first showed up in Sacramento, I thought bills were introduced in a fully complete form, and you might have to compromise and change things, or you might find a few flaws as you moved along. But many people introduce bills in so-called spot form, where it's about the general subject, and as it moves along, it's fleshed out, and it moves into the more clear form that addresses the issue that it is. And today, I introduced two or three of those that are more in spot fashion, because it's clear that there are negotiations to be had and that everybody is a willing partner, but the arrangement isn't fully made yet. And so I hold a place for the bill, and those negotiations will go on in about 6 weeks. I will amend the bill to put in exactly the form, but we have a six-month bill process, so there'll be a full vetting by committees on each side and on the floor in each side of the House,
and
provided I get that far.
Okay, let's use as an example the bill that you have introduced, which would provide about half of the funding needed to rebuild the levees on the Pajaro River. What state is that bill in, and how much more work do you have to do to polish it? And then where do you find the money as the chair of the Budget Committee to fund a bill that's clearly very important to you?
Well, that's a good question, because in that case, it's to back up for the listeners, the federal government's going to do a flood project with levees on the Pajaro River. They'll put a fixed amount of money in, and it has to be matched by the state or the locals to fully fund the project. And right now, the locals are on the hook for the entire match, but the state traditionally does part of it. And so this bill will authorize a state part of it, and then the bonds that are about to go forward will have a line item for flood subvention projects, and those are any flood projects that the legislature has authorized the state chair for. So what I'm going to try to do is work both ends against the middle, get the authorization for the state chair for the Pajaro River project, and then make sure that amount is included in the line item for flood subvention projects that are in the bond, and hopefully they'll both come together and the voters will approve it. And every dollar we bring from the state to that project is a dollar less that the people along the Pajaro River will have to pony up for the flood project.
And you're well positioned to deliver on this because you chair the Budget Committee, you represent the area, and the Speaker appointed you to the committee that is going to haggle over the governor's bond proposals, and so you're going to be a voice at that table to be able to fashion that package as it moves forward and try to address the Pajaro issue.
If it can be done, I ought to be able to do it, but there's, you know, the big open questions about whether we come together on a bond package, and you know, but I feel like the planets have aligned to make this work.
And some of that, of course, you laid the groundwork for over the years. John Laird is with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, another bill that you have introduced is AB 2076, which is, to me, an extension of the legacy of John Vasconcellus, the state senator from Silicon Valley who is a friend of mine and who long championed needle exchange as a way to reduce exposure to HIV/AIDS, hepatitis, and other blood-borne illnesses. Tell us a little bit about this bill and what kind of opposition you expect.
Well, it's interesting because right now the state gives grants to local needle exchange programs, but says you can't buy the needles or the syringes out of the grants. And so you have these street-level programs that do clean needle exchange, and they have to go out and fundraise above their state grant to buy the syringes to make the whole thing work. This bill basically says buying syringes out of their grants is an allowed expense. And as you said at the outset, you know, these programs, clean needle exchange, it's not just that it's good public health, the spread of disease. A one-for-one needle exchange keeps needles out of playgrounds and off of streets. And when I was involved in these kinds of programs in the 80s and 90s in Santa Cruz County, it was the biggest avenue to bring people into drug treatment. And so I'm hoping this bill, a piece of it was vetoed last year, and I think we are working it out so that it could go all the way this year. And we moved almost all the law enforcement opposition off. All that was left were the narcotics officers, and compared to past opposition, that was very small. So I'm optimistic. We just have to make sure we can get the governor at the end.
Mm-hmm. And, John Laird, we got about a minute remaining. Talk just briefly about how you see things moving forward. There's a deadline for the first round of bonds proposed by Governor Schwarzenegger for infrastructure rebuilding in the state. And you're part of the committee, I referenced this a moment ago, that is going to haggle over what the priorities are and, you know, the exact terms that these bonds will be let on. And, of course, ultimately the total amount, that's going to be a very significant struggle. How is this shaping up? And there isn't much time for these decisions to be made, is there?
March 10th is the deadline, and I think we can agree on education, transportation, and resources. And if the governor's ready to get to work next week and maybe bring a few Republican votes with him, we can do it.
Mm-hmm. What will the internal talks look like?
I think that the real question is there anything the legislative Republicans will support? And I think that we'll try to lessen the general fund impact a little. But at this point, there's general agreement on education and transportation. And I think the governor is willing to accept resources and some levy and water money and maybe affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And we have to sprint to make that work. If he's willing to truly engage this week, we can meet that March 10th deadline.
And do you think he'll, you know, be willing to engage, or you think he'll have another motorcycle accident?
I thought he was willing to engage, and now I'm beginning to think that he wanted to wait to get through the Republican convention this weekend, where some people are going to attack his bond package, and he didn't want to move too quickly before it. So I think Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday will be telltale days toward whether the bond will be successful.
Very good, sir. We'll look forward to your report next Friday.
Yes, me too.
All right. John Laird, Democrat from Santa Cruz, in a very interesting position, and you got a very sharp look at the process of bills in the legislature in Sacramento. We're going to take a break and return with Brad Friedman, proprietor of bradblog.com. We're going to talk about electronic voting. We're going to talk about Bruce McPherson's certification of Diebold last Friday afternoon at about this time, so that you wouldn't notice. We'll talk about the infrared attachment that Brad has discovered on the back of some Diebold electronic voting machines. That's all ahead in the next 45 minutes right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
If you own a Volvo and you want quality repairs and great service at a fair price, then take your Volvo to Hunt's Auto Repair in Seaside. They only work on Volvos, and they can do any needed service and repair, including all factory recommended maintenance. Owner Mike Brooks is a Volvo certified and factory trained technician with over 16 years experience. Mike's partner Tracy is also a factory trained Volvo service advisor. Many Volvo owners in the area already know and trust Tracy to take care of their Volvos.
Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside, is a locally owned and family operated full service Volvo repair shop, where Mike and I feature honest, quality service at a fair price.
Bring your Volvo to us, and we'll do everything possible to ensure that you leave satisfied and fully informed about your Volvo. Remember, that's Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside. For more info, give us a call at 583-9820.
That's 583-9820.
Are you having a problem making your home loan payments? Do you have equity to protect? At your wit's end, trying to figure out how you'll be able to keep your home? Would you like to speak to a highly qualified loan agent who does not charge for advice? Hi, I'm John Sullivan of Executive Financial Services in Salinas. We can advise you about negotiating with your lender, and believe me, most lenders would rather negotiate with you than own your home. We can advise you about the foreclosure process and bankruptcy filings. If you need us, you can call us 7 days a week between 10 and 7 at 443-7277. We personally answer the phone and don't pre-screen our calls. We're here to give you advice. We can give you your options 5 minutes after reviewing your credit report. We might be able to help you. We might not be able to help you. But if you never call us, you'll never know. That's 443-7277 for a five-minute solution. Executive Financial Services at 443-7277.
KRXA say 540. Checks your traffic. It's almost 520. And here's Stephen Taylor, Metro Traffic.
Thank you. Most of the earlier accidents and stalls have been cleared, but we've just heard of an injury collision that we believe is down in the Big Sur area on Highway 1 before Coast Road, just north of Rocky Point Restaurant, if you know where that is. Motorcycle down, excuse me, and emergency vehicles on the way. Outside of that, things are looking pretty smooth. This report, or lack of one, brought to you by National University. For blowing money at Valley Fair, better increase your earning power at National University's new center just behind Santana Row and Tishway. Get started. Call 1-800-NAT-UNIV. Stephen Taylor with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thank you, Stephen. And every weekday morning, Casey Lynch got your traffic on the Stephanie Miller Show twice an hour as you're driving to work. Tune in, KRXA 540, and Stephanie will get you laughing on the way to work. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. That makes me your humble host, Peter B. And every week, we schedule a visit with the proprietor of BradBlog.com. His Bradness, Brad Friedman. Hello, Brad. How you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Peter?
I don't know. I've been trying to think of how I could put together some foreign investors and buy the port of Long Beach.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've always wanted to have a port in my portfolio.
Oh, well, that's a good idea.
There's nothing else in it.
Yeah, nobody will pay attention if you do. Quite all right. Wow,
well, Brad,
what a week, huh?
Brad, here's stuff that I have on my list to talk with you about, and let's compare notes, and then we'll dive in.
Okay.
Clint Curtis, great interview earlier this week.
Oh, great.
Bruce McPherson, last week at this time, snuck out the announcement about recertification of Diebold.
He sure did.
The Brad Blog exclusive, the infrared connection on the back of some Diebold machines.
Yep.
And Palm Beach, 100,000 votes. Found in, what, somebody's cargo pants?
No, 100,000 errors is what they found.
Okay.
Yes, errors on the computerized Sequoia voting machines down there, just so that Diebold doesn't get off too easy this week. These machines down there were actually Sequoia touchscreen machines.
All right. Well, where would you like to start? I'm going to let you choose the news.
Well, I can choose that, or I can give you the breaking news that I haven't even gotten up on Brad Blog yet.
Well, let's start there. We believe in breaking news. We break for breaking news.
I know, and as a matter of fact, some of this actually comes back to you, Peter, because I believe you were the one who tipped me off last month to some shenanigans up in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
We've now got some breaking news, a new chapter, a strange twist to that Alaska Diebold story. Basically, the Democratic Party up there had requested the election results, the files that are kept in the Diebold GEMS tabulator software, because there was a great deal of anomalies found in the 2004 election, where they had, in some cases, you know, 200% turnout somehow. And so they had requested, the Democratic Party up there had requested those files from the Board of Elections, as you recall. Mm-hmm. And the Board of Elections said, no, we can't give this to you because we have a contract with Diebold which says this is proprietary information. Move ahead a few weeks, and finally they talked, the election board up there claims to have talked to Diebold. Diebold said, okay, it's all right to go ahead and release that information. After all, however, the election board reserved their right to, quote, manipulate the data.
That's a rich quote.
That's right.
Yes.
To manipulate the data before releasing the files. Okay. But in any case, they were supposed to be releasing them, as you recall. That was the last we discussed this. Well,
that's what I remember, yeah.
Brings us up to this week. It turns out that just, I think, 2 days ago, and just before I came on the air, I finished reviewing this letter. But the state is now once again turning down, officially denying the request for that that public records request to release that data. Sit down for this one, because the top security official in the state of Alaska determined it would be a security risk to release this data to the Democrats. So they have now, so they're back to square one at this point, where they're going to have to decide what to do if they want to challenge it in court. But right now, apparently, it is a security risk for the voters in Alaska to get a look at the election data from the 2004 election.
Any chance they would release it to a neutral third party like, oh, the Emir in
yes.
United Arab Emirates,
that's
Dubai?
Right. The folks in Dubai have already reviewed this information, and they said everything is fine. It's unbelievable. This is what happens, Peter, as you know, when you privatize our public elections. It is absolutely insane. I can't imagine what security risk is posed by not allowing the voters to see how they actually voted in a presidential election, for crying out loud.
Yeah, it's a need-to-know basis, and I guess we just don't need.
That's correct. We'll have, hopefully, after we get off the air and the 5 or 10 minutes to finish writing up this story, I will have the complete letter from the security official and from the state election official denying this public records request in this bizarre, really bizarre chapter, I would say, up there in Alaska.
You'll be able to find it within the hour at bradblog.com if all things go well.
That's right.
Now let's go kitty corner across the country to Palm Beach. And what's the story there, Brad?
Okay, down in Palm Beach, and this broke just late last night, notable for a number of reasons, amongst them because it was actually picked up by the Associated Press, believe it or not. AP ran a story that was based on a report from Black Box Voting, an election watchdog group. They have been trying, apparently, for months to receive the election audit trail data from Palm Beach County, Florida. It took them some 9 months, apparently, to get this information. Once they did, they've been reviewing it, and they have released a lot of it last night on their website, and it turns out that they have found things like 100,000 errors logged on these paperless touchscreen Sequoia machines down there. They've got some, I don't have it in front of me here, they had 70,000 errors with the cards. You know, when you use these touchscreen machines, I don't know if you've used them before, but you need to put a card into the machine when you go to vote.
Yeah, it's like your ATM card. It accesses the machine and fires it up.
That's correct. So they found 70,000 errors related to those smart cards. They have found all kinds of notations in the audit logs that the dates are completely incorrect. Sometimes they've got things going on those machines in the middle of the night that are unexplained. They've got some machines that have all kinds of crazy data, including some data from 2010, yet nothing on Election Day, which was November 2nd, 2004.
And let me jump in here, yeah. Brad, because the language here in the report reads that computers logged about 100,000 errors, including memory failures. Now, if the computer logged those errors, can we relax and have confidence? Well, these are exposed. This is out on the table.
Well, it was hardly exposed. I mean, here we are in 2006, and it took these guys 9 months to even get at this data, much less to explain it, because there's all sorts of errors in there that are not explained. Amongst them, for example, many of the machines were rebooted over and over again throughout the election. Many of the machines were recalibrated. These touchscreen machines had to be calibrated.
We'll pick up there when we continue. Time for a break. Brad Friedman, my guest from bradblog.com. You can call us 831-899-5792. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, be the path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Join R.J. Moyer for his new weekend show, About College Funding, this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding, Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Discover the magic of green tea, an ancient secret with amazing powers. The benefits of green tea have helped improve the health of thousands of people. Renowned health expert Dr. Alex Duarte says that green tea has powerful antioxidant properties that keep the immune system strong. Listen to KRXA AM 540 on Saturday, February 25th at 5 p.m. to learn how you can use green tea to increase energy, lose weight, and live longer. Don't miss this show on Saturday, February 25th at 5 p.m. right here on KRXA AM 540, your progressive prescription.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, live up and down the left coast. It's 5:33, another summer weekend headed our way.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never crossed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking, or you and your homies might be I really hate the trip, but I gotta low. As they croak, I see myself in the pistol smoke. Fool, I'm the kind of G the little homies wanna be like. On my knees in the night, saying prayers in the streetlight.
I don't know if it works for you, but I think of the electronic voting industry as a gangsta's paradise. With apologies to Coolio, we continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. For me, the leading site where you can get information on the issues related to electronic voting in this country and the battle to regain control from corporate interests. And Brad, before the break came through like a freight train and interrupted us, we were talking about Palm Beach County, Florida, 2004 presidential election, And depending on the reports, 70,000 malfunctions with the key card that voters use to access the machine, and more significantly, 100,000 memory errors recorded. Now, we would assume that all of those liabilities, any of the problems, would have deducted votes from the Republicans, from George W. Bush, right?
Well, we don't know. We don't know exactly what those errors meant, what actually occurred during those errors. All that we know is those errors got logged, and there's really no explanation for them.
But the pattern we saw in 2000 in Florida and in 2004 in Ohio were that anomalies tended to affect Democrats negatively and rarely did the same to Republicans.
That would be correct. So far, we see that all over the place with these, for example, the touchscreen machines. We've had thousands of reports of folks trying to vote for John Kerry, and the vote hops over to George Bush. We've had almost no report. I think I've heard of maybe two reports of the other, of it going the other way, where somebody's trying to vote for Bush and it ends up going for John Kerry. You're correct.
Yeah.
One additional point that when we had to go to the break there, you were asking about these errors and if that means, oh, everything's fine and we caught them. One of the things that was noted in these reports was that one machine, for example, was powered down 128 times during the election. Now, if you've used your computer before and found out that it crashed or the screen froze or something like that before you were able to save the data, and you had to power it down to start it back up, you know that, in fact, on this one machine alone, powered down 128 times, there's no way to know what data actually ended up getting lost.
Well, based on my experience, when it crashes, you lose data.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. While we're in Florida, let's talk about Clint Curtis, and then I want to segue to Bruce McPherson's late Friday announcement a week ago today.
Okay.
Clint Curtis is a guy you turned us on to through the blog and through your reporting on his whistleblowing of Tom Feeney, and we have to identify who Tom Feeney is. He's a major Republican operator in the state of Florida. He was the running mate for Jeb Bush in 1994 when Jeb was not successful in his quest to be governor of Florida. And he approached Clint Curtis at the software company YEI, Yang Enterprises, where he worked in Florida, and said, hey, well, and by the way, this guy Feeney was the counsel to this software company, so he was an insider both in the Republican machinery and in this relatively small software company.
Yeah, well, actually, Feeney was, at the time, he was general counsel and registered lobbyist for the company, even while Feeney himself was Speaker of the Florida House.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what Clint Curtis told us, and we looked at the affidavit that you have a copy of in your reports at bradblog.com, and it was just fascinating to hear him describe how he was asked to prepare software that could manipulate votes without being detected. He did so. And I said, well, Tom Feeney must have said, well, Clint, we need this software because we think the Democrats are going to steal the election and we need to know how they'll do it. And he said, oh, no, it was nothing like that. He said, we need to save the vote in South Florida.
Well, sort of, yeah. He had that with the impression that Clint got. And remember, Clint at the time was a Republican. He was a lifelong Republican. And even now, he, begrudgingly, when you ask him what he is, he'll say, conservative Democrat.
Right.
So, at the time of that meeting, that was the impression that he got from the meeting with Feeney. It wasn't until the next day, after he had gone away and put together this vote rigging prototype, he brought it back to the CEO of the company, Mrs. Yang, and explained to her that, hey, I could do everything that you guys ask for except hide these routines in the source code, because if anybody looks at the source code, they'll see the routines. And she said to him, oh, you don't understand. We have to hide that source code in order to get the contract. This is to be used to flip the vote in South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, he figured out something wasn't right.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible story. And he reported a lot more shenanigans that were going on at this company, including harboring Chinese aliens that were spying, he alleges, on the United States. And in fact, later on, several years later, the one of the fellows that he fingered as being an illegal alien who was spying on America was in fact arrested for espionage charges related to sending missile chips to China.
And the juicy payback is that whistleblower Clint Curtis is now a Democrat, and he's running against Tom Feeney in the congressional race this year. That's going to be a very interesting one.
And I'll take the opportunity to let folks know he could use support in a big way, because Feeney's got a lot of money. He's DeLay's number one supporter. He was Abramoff. He was on those trips to Scotland and everywhere else. So feel free to stop by ClintCurtis.com. And help the whistleblower fight the bad guys down there
and
in Florida.
Likewise, his Bradness is conducting a subscription drive right now. And if you would like to support his work fighting for our electoral rights, I direct you to bradblog.com, where you can take out a subscription for any amount that you're comfortable with. And I think that's a great way to approach it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Ryan in Salinas, you're on the air with Peter B. and Brad Blog.
Hey, good day, gentlemen. Hey, I want to thank Brad for his pursuit of the trying to get this disclosure about these machines. It sounds like an ongoing issue that warrants a lot of concern. Peter, a couple of weeks ago you mentioned that you had a problem with some reform in the state of Ohio. One of the elements of the reform was that there would be a requirement for some sort of an identification requirement. And I'd like you to explain either on the air or on the phone how confirmation that a person is who they claim to be is detrimental to the electoral process.
Well, Ryan, it's interesting because when the Carter-Baker Commission first released its report, one of the recommendations was for a photo ID for anyone before they're given a ballot at the polling place. And I initially said, oh, you know, that's okay. And then talking with a number of people on the program and hearing the issues aired out, I realized that this is a kind of phony stalking horse coming from the Republican right. And they have figured out that if you require a photo ID, that most Republicans will already have one or be able to get one, and that it will cause very little reduction in turnout or participation by Republicans. But
why is that a partisan? Why do you think the Republicans would probably have an ID, or, I mean, it sounds like anybody could get one.
No, I'm about to explain that there are many people who typically vote Democratic who are members of minority groups and who are low income and seniors who do not drive, do not have cars, and therefore have never had a need for a state issued photo ID in the past. And there is no provision among those who are proposing the photo ID for voters to supply one at no charge, either through a motor vehicle department or through voting registrars. So this then becomes a barrier to participation. And Ryan,
hold on.
I'm the host here, Ryan. Your next question might be, well, gosh, how widespread is voter fraud where people use phony IDs or, you know, go in and a ghost vote for somebody else? And the answer is it's close to zero. So this is a solution looking for a problem that is a way of dressing up a Republican proposal to restrict participation by minorities and low-income individuals who typically vote Democratic. Your turn, Ryan.
I think it's more of a case of trying to encourage everyone to participate on a level playing field. And I personally have no problem with a person that wants to vote in our system producing some sort of identification to confirm that they are who they say they are.
Obviously, there was
a group of people in, was it Wisconsin, that couldn't get out to drive their cars to vote. So there was, what, five Democrat Party operatives that slashed the tires of the vehicles that were going to use, they were going to be used to help people that didn't have transportation. They may not have had IDs either.
Actually, so Ryan, let me help you out here for a second, if I could.
Ryan, hold on. Brad wants to speak. Go ahead, Brad.
Let me help you out here if I could. By the way, those were not Democratic Party operatives. That said,
That's not true, Brad. You know that. He worked for the local DNC committee in Madison.
Ryan, what you'll note about this isn't the problem about asking about ID. It's specifically asking for photo ID, which has been found to be unconstitutional by two federal courts recently as it was reviewed down in Georgia. That said, please also note that do you vote absentee by any chance, Ryan?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And how are you going to be giving your photo ID when you vote absentee? Now,
I'm in favor of some way of confirming that people are who they say they are, whether it's at the time of registration or whether you come up with a thumbprint or a fingerprint at the time.
Not a problem. That's not what we're talking about here at all. And you need to be careful because, in fact, it is an insidious Republican scheme to try and disenfranchise anywhere from 10 to 30 million Americans who do not have photo ID. We're not talking about ID when you register. You can ask for ID when you register. Most of the states that are doing photo ID, these state houses that are now trying to push this through, already have laws that when you vote for the first time at a polling place, you have to show some form of ID. The problem is there is no voter fraud epidemic in this country, and all of these laws that will require photo ID do not require photo ID for those who vote via absentee ballots and military ballots, and in both cases, those are largely Republican voters. Those people, like yourself, will not be required to use a photo ID. So you can vote for your wife or anybody else you want, and you'll never be asked for a photo ID. So I don't know how it levels the playing field, as you discussed.
Let's all agree that there's lots of room for reform here. And I don't think there's anybody, I don't want there to be a possibility of skewing these machines one way or the other. I'm for free and fair. And I'm also for people being who they say they are when they go to vote.
I'm right there with you, Ryan. I'm exactly for it. And if you don't need a photo ID when you vote, then why should anybody else need one?
All right, Ryan, I'm out of time. Thanks for your call today. Good to talk with you. It's 5:46. We'll return with Brad Friedman. You can call us 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, toll free from Eureka or elsewhere at 888-579-2540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
This is it. This is the world we live in. What are we going to do about it? It's time to stop picking parasites off your friend's hairy back and become an engaged cerebral citizen. Yes, there is more to American youth culture than McDonald's, malls, MySpace, and corporate monopolies. We have got to do better than the current apes that are in the process of turning this country into a banana republic. But we need your help. Call in, tell your friends, and listen to The Naked Ape, Sundays on KRXA.
Listen live, Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Hi, this is KRXA 540 News anchor Casey Lynch inviting you to join us for a new program, Coach Casey's Call, Saturday mornings from 11 to noon. The show is dedicated to promoting local athletes and the teams they compete for. Coach Casey's Call features in-studio guests as well as listener phone calls, giving you an opportunity to join in the discussion and support the local sports scene. Join us Saturday mornings, 11 to noon, here on KRXA 540 AM for Coach Casey's Call.
KRXA 540 takes one more look at your traffic on the ride home here on Friday afternoon. Here's Stephen Taylor.
Thank you. Emergency vehicles are on the scene south of Carmel on Highway 1, a bit north of Rocky Point Restaurant, where a solo motorcycle rider is down and injured. Outside of that, you'll probably find some slow spots along your favorite freeway, but no accidents or stalls to report at the moment in the Monterey or Santa Cruz areas. This report sponsored by National University, A tech person who's also a people person is also called management material. Earn your MS in software engineering in 12 months from National University. You visit the San Jose Academic Center today or call 1-800-NATUNIV. Stephen Taylor with traffic on KRXA 540.
I wouldn't make it a habit calling me that, son.
Thanks, Stephen. We'll check back with you later. Have a great weekend. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. And we continue with Brad Friedman, the proprietor of bradblog.com. We got some callers we're going to get to you, but first, we've got to update people on the sneaky maneuver by appointed Republican Secretary of State here in California, Bruce McPherson. 1 week ago today, at right about this time, he dropped the bomb. And when you want to drop a bomb and avoid media attention, the Bush White House would instruct you that Friday about 5:15 is a really good time because the TV newscasts are all set for Friday and they don't do as much hard news. And the Saturday paper is the least read paper of the week. So if you want to bury something, this is the time to do it. And Brad, we saw the surprise announcement, and I got your blog update just before the end of the program last week, that Bruce McPherson did just that and announced that he was recertifying Diebold electronic voting machines in California.
Yes, it was pretty amazing. I was on the air myself when I got the news just before the top of the hour, really. And mind you, it was also a holiday weekend, so it was an extra long weekend that he released that information on, defying... Boy, just about all reason in the world, he has gone ahead and recertified these Diebold touchscreen machines in the state after they were decertified back in 2004 when it was found that Diebold was using illegally patched machines, uncertified software, and that resulted in a multi-million dollar settlement with the state. And then moving it up to this last summer, they did a massive mock election test. They found that anywhere from 20 to 30% of the machines failed. Then you come to December where Diebold machines were found to have hackable code. And, in fact, an election, a test election, was flipped down there in Florida. And so when McPherson started to talk about recertifying these machines, suddenly he was in trouble because we had this hack down there in Leon County, Florida, concerning these memory cards that contain software, essentially, that can be hacked and was never actually examined by the federal authorities. So he sent those memory cards back to the feds to ask them to look at the data that was found, this hackable, it's called interpreted code, and said that, you know, he was going to hold off certification until he heard back from the feds. Well, about 2 months has gone by. He hasn't heard back, or at least we don't know if he's heard back. While I've been on the air here, I actually received a letter that I'm going to review from him. But instead of waiting to hear back that, in fact, these machines, these cards, used this code, which is actually banned by federal guidelines, he had his own analysis done here in the state. The analysis found, in fact, confirmed that this hackable code exists on these machines. And then almost inexplicably on Friday night, he went ahead and certified the machines anyway, despite what his own report tells him, which confirms, and I mean, it says in quite plain language that, you know, anybody who can get access to these machines can completely control, can flip the results of an election.
And I want to direct people to your coverage at bradblog.com because you also put together, you linked to a video interview in which Secretary McPherson, I believe in January of 2006, described a process that would take place before these Diebold machines could be recertified, and it required a sign-off by the Federal Office of Information Technology, the ITA. That didn't occur. And he also promised that there would be public hearings in between that approval by the feds and his recertification here in California. Those steps were not taken, and so far we haven't been able to get to the Secretary of State to hold him to account. But we did talk to Senator Deborah Bowen the other day, and she's steaming mad about this.
Yeah, she is outraged because, in fact, yeah, in that video, I mean, he says outright that, you know, until they hear back from the feds, they cannot move forward with their certification process. But he went and did it anyway. I'm concerned for your listeners driving home this hour listening to all of this stuff, wondering how this can be, and I just don't want them to swerve off the road with rage, anger, or confusion. All of this stuff is very real and as perplexing to me as I'm sure it is to folks who are listening and hearing this stuff for the first time. It Yeah. boggles the mind.
And we're not going to have time to talk about it, but I want to direct people to Brad Blog again for the story that you broke a couple of days ago, that touchscreen voting machines made by Diebold have built-in wireless infrared data transfer ports, and you've identified them in a picture right on the back of one of these boxes. This is very disturbing, and people should get up to speed on that. Jake in Arcata, thanks for holding. You're on the air with Peter B. and Brad.
Hey, Peter. Hey, Brad. How's it going?
Hey, Jake.
Hey, I have a question for you. Obviously, the big story this week, well, you know, other than the civil war in Iraq, would be the port story and how Bush is turning it over to the United Arab Emirates. I've heard a lot about the Carlyle Group having a big stake in this deal, and as we all know, the Carlyle Group is the investment firm the Bush family has a lot of money in, that the Bin Laden family had a lot of money in, that invests in the defense industries. I'm kind of curious, what is the Carlyle Group's connection to this deal of turning over our ports to the United Arab Emirates? Do you have the details on that?
I don't have the details on that. I have not been able to cover that story as closely as I might have liked because we've had so much breaking news going on this week, and a lot more next week. But maybe Peter has.
I'll pinch it for you here. Yeah. The connection is that Jon Snow, who is the Secretary of Treasury, was charged as the Secretary to conduct the review of this proposed transfer of P&O from a British company to Dubai, the government of Dubai, through their company. And he stands to benefit because CSX, the company he used to be CEO of, made a deal with Dubai Ports World just before he left that post to become a government employee through the revolving door. $1.8 billion was the deal between CSX and Dubai Ports World, and it was revolving around ports and port machinery operations in Europe. Jon Snow also appears to be benefiting through deferred payments and his pension plan because the Carlyle Group purchased a major stake in CSX about a month after Jon Snow left the company to become Secretary of the Treasury. That's what we do know. There's a lot more we need to dig in and find out. Thank you, Jake. A quick comment from Chris in Salinas. You're on the air, Chris. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering when Tony Entrundo is going to show up back on your show.
That's a good question. We have the invitation out. He has told the station manager of KRXA that he's going to do it. We had a slot for him yesterday that he did not respond to accept. And so I'll say the invitation process continues, Chris.
Yeah, well, I've emailed him a couple times and he hasn't emailed me back. Also, who should we contact at Californians to stop this Bruce McPherson? I mean, is there, besides our assembly members and our Senate, is there anything else we can do?
Yeah, indeed. There's five members of the Rules Committee. I wish I had a really quick, easy link I could give you. But essentially, check Brad Blog. You'll find it there and elsewhere. There's five members of the Rules Committee that need to hear from you via phone, via email, however, that you would like them to subpoena the vendors of these electronic voting machines to show up at a hearing. And frankly, at this point, subpoena, as far as I'm concerned, Bruce McPherson, who also refuses to show up. But DeborahBowen.com, I think, has more on all of that, if I'm not mistaken.
You're right. D-E-B-R-A, Bowen, B-O-W-E-N. Thank you, Chris. Good
all
to
right,
talk
thanks.
To you. Brad, as always, a pleasure. We'll catch up with you next week. I want to remind people to go to bradblog.com and sign up for a subscription. You name the price. What a sweet deal. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, brother. Have a great weekend.
Happy trails to you until we meet again.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you interesting topics and personalities from the world of food, wine, and fun. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, winemakers, restaurateurs, famous chefs, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove. Stop by today for all your quality beverage needs and ask them about their single malt scotch tasting on March 22nd. And tell them the Tasty Planet sent you.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Peter King. It's the first shot in what could become a Supreme Court battle. South Dakota lawmakers have passed a bill that would ban nearly all abortions in the state. Governor Mike Brown says he'll likely sign it.
I agree that Roe v. Wade should be overturned. The question will be, does this bill in its current form address that?
CBS News legal consultant Andrew Cohen says the law would be unconstitutional and unenforceable. So why go there?
They're trying get this in line and get this going so that if it makes it to the high court at some point in the future, it's there in time to take advantage of what they hope will be changes up there on the personnel.
An unusual quiet in Iraq as a daylight curfew is extended for another day. Reporter Borzu Daragahi is in Baghdad.
There's no vehicle traffic except for police officers and police commandos and Iraqi soldiers driving around, sometimes using their AK-47s as car horns, which is a practice here. So you hear occasional bursts of gunfire.
The curfew is supposed to quell the violence that has seen some 140 deaths since Wednesday, reaction to an attack on a Shiite mosque. That controversial Arab port management deal is on hold at least for now while the Bush administration tries to sell the idea to lawmakers. CBS News White House correspondent Mark Noller.
Looking to avoid a veto showdown with Congress, the White House welcomes the Arab company's offer to delay a takeover of some port operations in the U.S. Spokesman Scott McClellan says the time will help the administration explain to Congress why it has nothing to fear from the arrangement. McClellan could not say precisely how long a delay the White House wants, but he says President Bush remains adamant that the deal should go through.
Teamsters protested that deal in almost two dozen cities today. In Beaumont, Texas, CBS's Lee Cowan says that people there think they've got good reason to be worried about security.
As much as one-third of the U.S. Army's equipment deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan is shipped from right here. If the port takeover goes through, those who know what the Army is putting on board and where it's going will be employed by a company owned by Dubai.
Workers with